Tonight's episode of Heavy Meta is brought to you by Face-to-Face Games.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome to Heavy Meta, your source for magic news, entertainment, and comedy.
What is up, hockey fans? I'm Kevin Metal.
And I'm Maddie Studios.
And you're listening to Heavy Meta, the Gretzky episode number 99.
We're the great one,
yes. I'm assuming that you're, when you say great one, you're probably talking about Gretzky and not this podcast.
Oh yes, 100%. I am not referring to any hosts of this podcast. Maybe one of the guests. I might be referring to as great, but probably not the cast in general. But it doesn't matter.
More Twitter followers than Wayne Gretzky does, I think.
You know what? He might. He definitely has more Twitter followers than goals. But tonight, folks, this is number 99. This is the last episode that Heavy Metal will ever be what you listen to tonight. From every other episode that will take place in the future, it will not be the show.
I love how you drug that out so that just for like our fans for like 3-4 seconds there, they're shitting themselves thinking that we're not going to keep going after episode 99.
That would
be the last episode that
yeah, that would be that'd be a hell of a way to go out. Just go to 99, don't do an episode.
Yeah, we're done. Fuck off.
But tonight, folks, we've got the master of, as he puts it, putting one track in front of the other. I think he's a bit of a master of the treble, the bass. He likes to drop it occasionally. I've been listening, I know, to his cast, Bumpin' the Night, since episode one. I believe on episode two, he gave me a shout out to Maddie Studios, which I played for my kids and my wife like 50 times. The end, he's like, shout out to Maddie Studios. And I was like, oh my God, this is awesome. The one and only Spruik.
Hello, Maddie. Hello, Kevy. I'm happy to be here.
What is up, my good friend? Now, we decided to bring you on because, you know, you answered. No, that's not why. We decided to bring you on.
Because we got to figure out how to get popular, man.
Yeah. Really, actually, that is one of the major questions that we have for you tonight. Because I am somewhat of a masters of ceremonies of the hyping of the Twitter realm. I try to practice and move in those circles of making sure I can keep the hype at a certain level, but I am not worthy to even sit or tweet in the same amount of characters as you, my friend. You are in a whole new level. You have a blue check mark, for Christ's sake.
He gets like 160 characters to tweet with because he's fucking hyper.
Do you? Yes, I wonder, dude.
Verified, they give you the last characters.
They give you an extra.
Those are all the more sweeter. The emojis are brighter in those characters. In all seriousness, I'm humbled. I understand that I have done extraordinarily well on social media, which I have a good knack for, and I don't know if it's because I'm, you know, part comedian or part just bridging the passionate communities of Magic and DJing at the same time in a way that's really accessible to both. But starting with my, you know, Magic raps as the Gathering with Patrick Chapin, and then playing off my my good success just as a producer on its own. And then, as you said, Maddie, the fact that I can put other people's music in a particular sequence in a way that has delighted several people has worked out.
Yeah, man, and that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, going way back, I remember, I think it was about, what year did you release with Jace the Mind Sculptor? It was
2011.
2011, yeah, that was, so I remember, I think it was Evan Irwin. I can't remember who exactly tweeted it first. Maybe it was Chapin. Someone tweeted that, you know, Patrick Chapin is rapping. And I was like, are you shitting me? Like, this is going to be retarded. This is going to be stupid. There's no way this is going to work. And I remember hearing that track, and from the first beat, I'm like, okay, this is going to be pretty good. And it was sick, man. It's an addicting beat. It's very well done. Like, and it's kind of shaped that whole, I don't know, musical part of Magic. It was like this big thing. I remember playing it for my kids. They love that song. It's on their damn iPads, man. Like, they know Jace the Mind Sculpt. Like, I wonder how much push Jace got because you chose to rap about him there. I don't know.
There's
man.
A reason that Chapin chose that song. So, that one was one of Chapin's. And, you know, all credit to him for the idea, but he was talking about how he's like, here's something we were thinking about when we were doing this project, is you can't necessarily make a whole lot of single card songs, right? Because you might think something like Lightning Bolt is awesome, or people actually write me and they're like, you should do a song about how Tarmogoyf is so good. And it's sort of like, I know that seems like a good idea, but I'm going to get up there and be like, hey, it's the Tarmogoyf, he costs one in a green, and like, it's not as good as you think, right? And so we decided we wanted to have one song that was just about a card, like went deep on a card. And big hats off to Chapin. He knew this was the one he wanted to go in on. And it was at a time, it was right at that time when Jace was just beginning to get to be recognized for his power, right? Because it's easy to remember that in the beginning, people weren't really in on the Jace thing. People only saw him in the context of Bloodbraid Elf already existing. It just sort of seemed not right for the meta, and like it wasn't as good as the Jund things you could be doing. And yep. I feel like there was this turning point where he was in Standard for a couple months, only seeing play as a one of or two of in some decks, and people are like, hey, this is a good shell for Jace the Mind Sculptor. And then when we started the song, was right as we hit that turning point where suddenly Jace is starting to show up as a four of in a lot more things. Cobblade had just hit the
timing
suits.
Thing. It's that perfect timing on top of everything else. Just the timing was perfect for it, and it helps that much more.
Who wrote the lyrics? Was it Chapin that wrote the lyrics, or...?
Yeah, Chapin wrote the lyrics to Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Wow. He's got talent, man. That boy should write some more tunes. Although the beat is, like, all you, right?
Yeah, the beats are produced by me, with some input from Chapin. Also, fun trivia, I am the Jace the Mind Sculptor voice. But other songs on The Gathering are by Chapin is, if you like any of the songs,
I got all these.
Brewmaster's Delight, those are by Chapin. Had All D's, Never Was on the Pro Tour, Don't Drink and Draft, those are mine.
I love those, man. I just really love the whole underground kind of feel of it. I thought it was really cool, you know. At first, you have expectations or maybe, you know, assumptions of what this could be, but it's actually very well done, you know. Really good. And the other song that I can't remember the name of the title of it, but it's all where you're like throwing it at TV and consumerism.
Oh, okay, so that's a Spruik original by me. That's not The Gathering. That's off Lies Synth Pop Told Me, and it's the track Sold.
That's it, Sold. That song, I even tweeted the shit out of that because like, wow, was that powerful? That was very well done. Even the video, great. Great tune, great song about just how, like, you have to keep up with everything, you know? Like, I have this great TV, now I need a bigger one, you know? Oh, it was so well done, man.
I'm a big fan of that song does a lot with a little, because it's only about, like, a minute and 30 seconds long.
It's too short. I agree.
It just opens on, I bought a bigger TV so they could show me the ad for a smaller PC than one I already had.
Yeah.
So to people who aren't listening, or to people who are listening who maybe heard the Magic Rap stuff but haven't heard me on my own, Sold is probably the best song to dip your toes on. It's on YouTube. It's got a great video courtesy of Laura Grace, and actually I had some good luck with that one, because that one made it on NPR.
Did it?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, it's really? A good one. Yeah,
I didn't know you did a video for that one.
Oh, yeah, the video is the best part.
I don't think I've seen the video for that. I have that album, but I don't think I've seen that video. I'm going to have to look into that.
Oh, man, you're old. Don't you watch all your music on YouTube now, man?
No.
Thank you for supporting me by buying the album.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I love it. He's like, hey, man.
I buy my music, man.
I do, too. I should say, as an indie musician, I support other indie musicians. Bump in the Night that comes out every week, my DJ cast of an hour of DJ music every week, made with 100% purchased music. Every single track is always legally bought, because being in the position I am, I cannot ethically, you know, support piracy. These people are like me, and they deserve love and cookies too. So every time you hear a bell ring on Bump of the Night, that's a DJ Angel getting his wings somewhere. Or getting 99 cents.
If I could just get a Twitter up follower for every time somebody uses my songs, I'd be fucking set.
So that's awesome, man. I mean, I know, like, several years ago you were, I think you were tweeting about you'd lost your job or something, and you were looking for a new one. And then, was that about the time you started the whole Bump in the Night?
Yeah, it was pretty close. I started Bump in the Night in December of 2012. So we're almost coming up on 2 whole years. And that's a long time you've been listening, Maddie.
Oh, man.
So, the company I worked for did go bankrupt about 4 months later or so. You know, though, I'm in, like, fresh startup world is the kind of developer I am. And so these things will happen. I mean, I'm working at a startup right now that actually their launch party, they're launching their product right now as we record this. No way. I'm at the launch party. I'm back here with the servers on call, but really, I'm recording Heavy Meta with you guys.
I love it.
That's the way we do it, man. You gotta multitask in this world. No, yeah. But I had a question. I was wondering, because I know you always had a passion for the music, but when, and I know a lot of people want to know, because we have a lot of people who like ask us questions too. It's like, how did you start the cast? And we'll get into some of our Twitter hole followers later with questions from the hole, but they like to ask questions like, how do you start a cast and how do you get out there? And so coming from you, who has like 600,000 followers, like, how did you, and even why did you suddenly say, I'm gonna do this cast? And you put it on MTG Cast, which I thought was like groundbreaking at the time, because I was like, MTG Cast didn't have anything that I knew of at the time that was music. It was just straight Magic Dudes. And so, like, I was hooked.
Pretty groundbreaking. When people look back at the history of music, and they'll say, the moment somebody put a non-Magic cast on MTG Cast. Well, no, yeah. I mean,
that's one of the top 100 groundbreaking moments in music of all time.
It's pretty groundbreaking for what it was. Like,
no, but I definitely understand what you're saying, Maddie, because I noticed that, too. It was like, I remember, you know, hearing about that, and exactly, like, I was getting into podcasts and like just listening to all these magic podcasts, and it was all, not that they were all the same thing, but they were all the same premise. It was dudes sitting around, you know, microphones talking, whether they were all in the same room or across the world from each other. But then it was like, you know, here you came in, and I knew you as a magic, you know, a personality in the Twitter world that played magic. You know, that's all I used Twitter for anyway. And so I was like, okay, here's a quote unquote magic guy. But here he is doing this thing that, you know, you're not talking about magic cards on your podcast. You're actually spinning songs. And that I remember noticing the same thing. Maybe not, you know, like groundbreaking the Beatles kind of shit. But it definitely was something that stuck a lot in you doing that.
Well, like, here's the thing I wanted to say. Like, so watching, I guess, Kibler was probably one of the first. I think he was the first magic streamer to start, you know, running the electro pop music and all that stuff, right? So he was always playing Garth Emery, I think, was what he was playing. So I would listen to that, and then as you're listening, you're like, well, that's wicked tune, man. You go start listening to back catalog of Garth Emery cast, right? Or Above and Beyond or anything like that. So, you know, when I heard you start doing it, I'm like, man, you pick good damn songs. Like, of the people who just put one song after the other, as, you know, if you want to be so humble, I think you pick very good songs and very timely songs. And I love, like, some of the gems, like things that I would never kind of put in order. And so, like, it's from episode one, I was like, man, this is on rotation. This is just locked in. So well done. So, I mean, when you look at it in terms of what the Magic Cast world was at that time, it was very interesting. I guess MTG Cast is like, who cares? We'll take anything. But it was just such an odd thing, and yet it works so well.
Such a good thing, yeah.
It just fits. It makes a lot of sense.
What had been, I guess I would say that, like, what had been very good to me so far was just combining my passions in unsuspecting ways. So, you know, I'd found greater love from the community than I actually even anticipated when I thought, hey, let me bring my producing skills to Magic content. And people, mm-hmm. you know, came up to that right away. And so that kind of taught me, like, that people want to experience these things in new ways. And also that I think I have some level of goodwill with them. And so it's sort of like if you sat somebody down, especially like a poo-poo kind of person who likes to tell you why your ideas are silly and never work,
right.
They'll be like, why
you
are
mean
you
all
bothering?
Of Twitter?
Yeah, right. Well, why are you bothering putting this on MTG Cast? People, it shouldn't go on there or whatever. And what I was just thinking was like, at the place I'm at now, which that was at like the 6,000-7,000 Twitter follower point. I was like, at the place I'm at now, most of my fans are Magic people. Recognition with, well, because I've been big from The Gathering, but I haven't started getting big yet from Bump in the Night or really hit my total stride with Spruik, because I hadn't even released Factor Friction, which was like my first successful EP. I actually hadn't even released Laura by Spruik yet at the time, which was
that's right successful. Yes.
And so basically I came to it from a perspective, just this is most of my fans are Magic people. This is where they'll already be, and this is my home too. Like, and also it's like, who are your neighbors? Kind of. And I know this sounds silly because we're not physically next to each other, but if I was to like have really staked out my ground on like Liquid Radio or something, then I'd have, you know, DJ Butt Scamp and DJ Dark Ketamine or whatever on either side of me. And I don't know that those are my people. I actually have a disconnect with a lot of DJs and a lot of the DJing community. Some are great people, but I've got some philosophical differences too. But, you know, when I'm on MTG Cast, I was like, I'm going to be here. I'm in front of the people who already like me, just from this other thing I did, and it's where they're going to be. And my neighbors is going to be Constructed Criticism and Monday Night Magic, who are, these people are my friends already. This is who I want to be among. And it just seemed really natural. And it was a really great confluence. I mean, now since then, of course, you can hear Bump in the Night in a lot of different places, right? It's in iTunes. Yep.
It's everywhere.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said hold on.
No, that we never say hold on this show.
Okay. Oh, yeah. It's in iTunes. You can hear it on several radio stations in Denver and here. It's on Wax Museum Radio in Buffalo. It's in Royal Gorge FM in Denver. And it's coming to somewhere in Sydney soon. I'm still working on that. But it's, you know, in a lot of places. But MTG Cast is where I wanted to start it. And it still is kind of like, I want to be the DJ that belongs to the Magic players.
Oh, wait. Now, I notice as I've listened to Bump in the Night go along, the Magic references, it's not that you've you have a very broad audience now. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like, is that like where you're going is just now more just about DJing? Like, I don't know.
It's tough. Like I know that in early episodes I used to just say stuff like between songs I'd be like, I just mix this into this. And while this beat comes in for a little while, I'll tell you how I did in this PTQ last weekend.
Yeah, I loved that. I was like, oh, this is so cool. But I get that that's too niche, right?
Well, I mean, I still am, though. It hasn't been more than a few months since the Grand Prix Minneapolis and Grand Prix Montreal episodes.
That's true.
Right.
And I don't know if you're current, but like I broke into some pretty crazy monologues about Star Trek and Dungeons and Dragons 2 and 3 episodes ago. I just can't read all these ridiculous DJ names. It's the DJ names, I'm telling you. Somebody makes a track called Beholder or something, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, that's Beholder by, you know, DJ Twerkfest or something. And all I can see is this floating orb with a million eyes, and each one is individually twerking.
See, and I love that's that side of you, that side that, I mean, we all just like see magic in day-to-day life because this is what this game that we live and breathe pretty much. And it's like, I do that same shit all the time, just in a normal everyday capacity. I'll see random word on a sign and I'm like, oh, and it, you know, it's the name of a card or something. That's the first thing that pops into my head and I just have to laugh about it. Or I just end up imagining this, that, the other thing as magic cards. And it's, I mean, I love that you still have that going on.
Oh yeah, I mean it's deep. I've been playing since Revised.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's deep ingrained for you.
It's covered more than 2/3 of my life. I've been playing Magic longer than I've been doing literally anything that isn't pooping or eating. I mean, like I've spent more time as a Magic player than I have as a post-pubescent adult. I spent more time as a Magic player than I have as a person with a bank account. It just dwarfs all these things. And it's the biggest part of my whole personality, so I can't help seeing it in everything I do.
Now that's interesting. Let's kind of delve into the whole Magic. So you've been playing since Revised.
Yep.
Similar to like my beginnings. Have you ever taken a break from the game? Because I know most people kind of don't stay with the course.
I have. I got in. I was with it really steadily from like Revised Fallen Empires. That was middle school, right? So I picked it up around 5th and 6th grade. And then my first break was Urza's Saga. I got out of it,
okay.
Which was a bad time to stop buying packs.
Yeah, those were good packs, man.
Yeah, I kind of wish I still had that in my collection. But it was the time where I got the silliest reasons, right? It was 9th grade, and I got put in different classes than all my friends, and so I had nobody to play with. Senior year, it all comes roaring back. It's Odyssey year, and I'm back in business. And then pretty much straight through till the present day without stopping. I've drafted every set from Odyssey on multiple times. So I've been active at least as a limited player in any format that's existed in the last 15 years.
Oh, wow.
And I can't say I've been in Standard all that time. I've always followed Standard and known what was good. But I probably played Standard at half of those any given points, depending on, you know, my poor college student-ness
out
at camp at the time. Like, I missed a lot of Kamigawa-era Standard because that coincided with, like, senior year and credit cards and loans, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So what is your format of choice? I know, like, I would say I'm a modern. Like, that's kind of, like, where I want to like build my collection and also my knowledge, and that's kind of like where I like to play now. Like playing limited, you know, can't really afford to keep up with Standard. I like it. You know, what about you? Like what's your,
I play every format except Vintage. I would like to think I play them all equally. For a long time, I really liked Draft the best. Now I'm more of an egalitarian. I play Draft almost every week, Standard most weeks, Modern whenever I can, Legacy whenever I can, Sealed when I need to, Cube when we can get one together, and Commander when prudent. So,
I believe you ranked those very well. I would agree with that.
Now, Commander always comes last.
Commander is if I have no means to play anything else, and we have like three people, which I know there's draft formats for three people, but I don't like them. You can't make me like them.
No, you can't. You can't draft three people. That's
but there's Solemn Chester draft where you shuffle all the packs together and then you flip out four and everyone gets three claim chips. And when you put your, and I'm like, no, that's not drafting. I don't know, it's not drafting.
That's some crazy, complicated, weird thing that no, we're not doing that. We gotta stay with the standard stuff. I love Cube though. That's huge for me. Now, I know like this cast is pretty centered on, you know, Magic Online. That's where we play a lot of our stuff just because we have super busy lives and like so much going on. Are you old school paper? Do you play any Magic Online?
I play both online and offline. I mostly play paper now. I used to play online a lot, but when I met my now fiance, it helped to go offline a little more because as long as you're reveling in the whole point of doing something together, yeah, you know, actually do it together.
So did you teach her to play Magic or did she know
it? No, she already knew.
Ooh, that's good. Got a good one.
It was one of the things that we initially bonded over.
Wow. That is a rarity, my friend. You've got a gem.
Yeah. Oh, it's nothing special. She's real cool though. But but anyway, what was I going to say? Oh, just so that's when I've been living purely online for like the last 4 or 5 years before that because my friend group had kind of fallen out of it. And so I got my Jones in online. And then basically once I met another real world person who I could play with on a regular basis, I started playing in the real world again. And that kind of coincided with the online client getting really just less good all the time.
Yeah.
And so before I would say I was 95-5 online to real life. And today I would say I'm 80-20 real life to online. I used to do online as a daily habit, as a rule, like it was pretty much the chief thing I did. Now, especially since Hearthstone and stuff exist, it's kind of got to be like, it's Tuesday night, it's 11 p.m., and I really have the urge to play Magic, so I'm going to do it. But other than that, I'm cool playing IRL.
No, that's awesome, man. I mean, the more real-life stuff I play, I guess, it is, you know, obviously it's superior to play in real life than to play online. Sure. But, like, you know, it's one of those things, right? If you don't have the play group, you don't have the people, hey, man, it's your fix whenever you need it, so...
That's exactly where I'm at. Is it's like I've got my brother-in-law to play with. I've got a couple friends I can play with at times, but it usually ends up, you know, just here at my house. You know, we can hang out and we can play. Going out to like F&Ms and stuff usually isn't much of an option because of busy life. And so that's where I get my, you know, Magic Online is where I get my fix to be able to like play competitively. And play against the metagame and what's going on. But then, of course, you know, I'll get that fix at times too. Where I'm like, well, I could sit here tonight and fucking play a fucking, you know, play a daily or something like that. Or I could just have Daniel come over and we can actually have that interaction and play cards and have a good time. And if I could play competitively and have that kind of interaction all the time, I would. But, you know, my schedule and my limited play group doesn't really allow that to happen. And that's why I think Magic Online is such a good thing.
Now, Spruik, do you watch any of the Magic Pro Tours, any stuff like that, or are you...
No, I have in this case, I follow the Pro Tour, but I can't do the coverage. I just, I have other things to do.
Too much of a time suck?
To do.
Well, yeah, that's... I guess I shouldn't say that, because I don't want to make it sound like I'm too good for it or whatever. I don't like watched entertainment, because, you know, it's the whole weekend... I really don't want to be glued to my TV. This is when I go out and do other things. And like, I'd really like to be working on music, recording next week's episode of Bump in the Night. or spending quality time with the people I care about. So I tend to follow along written coverage better than anything else. Like during Pro Tour weekend, I read every feature match description and every article they put on. I just don't tune into the video coverage. And this last weekend, I actually missed a lot of it. Like, I missed the top eight because I was on a plane. I flew to Seattle and back for
All right.
a friend's wedding.
Oh, awesome.
So I caught up on it after the fact.
Yeah, I mean, what did you think about Ari Lax winning the whole thing?
I think it's really cool. I think he's had it a long time coming. He has been working very hard for some time, and I thought it was just a matter of time with that kid. His deck certainly bore that out. It's actually kind of funny that in a lot of ways that's two straight pro tours for Abzan, right? Because Journey into Nyx was basically the block version of that deck.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, man. I mean, I think it's funny that there was a bit of hubbub over Ari Lax and the way he... I don't know. I mean, I think it's people just being fucking whiners, but they're like, oh, man, you're a professional, the way you get excited and you slapped your card down for the win. And I'm like, dude, if I was on a pro tour and I just top deck freaking this card to win the game, you damn right I'm slapping that thing on the table. Like, that was like five turns. He was waiting to draw that one card his deck to win the game. So I don't get a bit of the hate out there. I think it's people just wishing they were in the Pro Tour winner seats.
I talked to some people about it, and I actually have a theory. Okay. This is one of those things where your prior perceptions of somebody shape how you interpret their actions, I think, and that I want you to close your eyes and imagine that that Zergo throw was that this was Gab Nassif or Wafo Tapa or LSV or somebody with like a year-long pattern of already being somebody everybody liked.
Yep, that there'd be no issue.
That is awesome. Everybody's like, that is so sweet. That's so, like, you gotta love that moment when Kibler slammed that Zergo. It would be seen as incredibly endearing. Lax is just newer to the scene. He doesn't, I mean, not that he's new, but in terms of being, like, longevitively of loved, he does not have that 6-7 year track record of being beloved behind him. So people are like, who is this kid? And they frame it as an upstart kind of
arrogance
thing.
Yeah, 100%. And imagine if Bertoncini did it. They'd be like, oh my God, ban him from the game.
Ban him.
He must have been up his sleeve. Zergo Smasher isn't even in this limited set. It's a miss fraud.
How the hell did he just explore twice? I don't even understand what's going on here. Yeah, like, I could totally see that. You're 100% right. People make face, you know, just read, you know, books by the cover, judging, and they just instantly look at someone for the first time. We're a very, very fickle society, I guess. So we're just
I think if it was one of those other players I mentioned, we'd be talking about it like Nassif's famous called shot. Or anything else.
Right.
I mean, people don't even remember, right? Brian Kibler in Worlds, they lost the bonfire. And I mean, and that gif is amazing because they just throw bonfire in the air. Like, they slam that down and he's just like, what the fuck? But it's a great moment. So I find it hilarious that certain people get, you know, labeled certain things, just like you said, Miss Fred, which is sad, but that's the society we live in now, I guess.
Now, I do know what's an example of getting too excited that you top-decked the winning card.
Okay.
I don't know how long you guys have both been following the Pro Tour, but if you remember back when Onslaught was the set drafted, there was a player who famously top-decked the Searing Flesh in his deck that was the only out to an opponent who had completely stabilized at 7 life, and he drew it off the top, wiped it up his butt crack and slammed it onto the table.
Oh.
And he was suspended for that, rightfully so.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I would go that far. And I do a lot of things for shock value.
I mean, I think we've talked about this in our cast many times that Magic has gotten too stale, too whitewashed, too worried about what everyone's going to think, and there's no villains. And, you know, it's funny, like, if this is the way you treat Ari Lax, guys, we're not going to get villains. Like, I think you need good drama. Like, it's okay to have a bad boy of the tournament scene, you know? Like, yeah, don't cheat shit, but, like, it's okay to have rough and tumble guys. Like, that's good. Yeah. I like to see that, you know? I think we need
more of that. You guys follow Mauro's blog? Do you read his Tumblr?
We do.
Yeah, so you might remember for a while he was talking about how he really wanted Mike Long in the Pro Tour Hall of Fame. And he talked about how they had gotten some bad advice at the time, what he considers bad advice, from publicity and branding companies who had advised them to create faces and heels on the Pro Tours, essentially. And that he says, you know, 80% of Mike Long's bad boyedness was trumped up by Wizards because they meant they're like, obviously they're playing off something that was kind of there, or they wouldn't have selected him to be their chief heel. But he says he feels someone please tweet at me or correct me in the comments if I'm misrepresenting what he said on his blog. But I recall him having said things like, I know for a fact that I was directly contributing to the perception of Mike Long as the ultimate bad boy rebel cheater that has led to him not being in the Hall of Fame for so many years due to sportsmanship. Like, I'm the guy who amplified that persona. Wow. And so I think that especially learning from that and how it cost a guy who was no doubt about it a great Magic player in the early days of the game a Hall of Fame membership, I don't think they're interested in ever taking a person who's probably a nice guy, just like anyone else or whatever, and making him the official ass of the Pro Tour.
Well, I don't know if I would give them that label unless Cammy ever got there. But, I mean, yeah. then you're good there. I just feel like, especially a couple of Pro Tours ago, it just was so boring. And, you know, we've said this, and I know I'm not going to, you know, convince any of the people out there. They love the way it is right now where you could have a team and they could all have different shirts on, but they're a team, but they all write for other blog. Like, there's no cohesiveness, and it's so weird that people switch teams. They're in the middle of Pro Tours, and I don't know who I guess I only root for the person. I don't root for the team. Then what's the point of having the team? You know, yeah. So I always wanted, I'm like, hey, like, if there's going to be a Channel Fireball and an SCG, I would like to then like to see that rivalry.
No, I get what you're saying with, like, you know, if there's a team, you know, they play with a team for testing purposes and stuff like that. But, like, I mean, you could almost, like, if it's not going to be a team type thing like any other, you know, sport out there, if there's not that team camaraderie, you can kind of downplay the team aspect of it. And then literally it'd be like, you know, golf. You only give a shit about.
Yeah, but they don't. They build, that's the thing. They build that team rivalry up massive on coverage.
No, that's what I'm saying. That could be the only, I guess, real way you could go with it is downplay the team thing and, you know, upplay the person. I mean, I'm sure, like, you know, you got, like, you could be watching, I don't watch golf.
It's a team sport, though.
Like, you could be watching, like, the Masters, and it's like, even though fucking, you know, this guy, that guy, and the other guy might have fucking, like, be sponsored by Titleist, they don't necessarily like each other or are not on the same team, yet they have the same sponsor. But, I mean, I get where, like, I mean, that's where it ends up. You've got, like, especially with the Star City Channel Fireball thing, you know, being the main ones, you know, they've got
Channel Fireball and other Channel Fireball.
Yeah.
The five Channel Fireball teams and the six.
But yeah, and you have those teams, so to speak. But then, of course, you know, like you were saying, Maddie, it turns into this thing where it's like, okay, well, you know, you got this guy's wearing a different shirt, and this guy is, you know, they're switching teams and this and that. So it is. I don't see a clear way to really promote the team aspect of things. So you just have to kind of go.
There's not that many, like, right? It basically breaks down like
three.
Pro Tour is five teams, right? Your Channel Fireball. Channel Fireball Part 2, Team Revolution, which is Europe.
Yeah, face-to-face games.
The Canadians, the Japanese, and Team Sean McLaren.
Team Sean McLaren. Yeah. Lone Wolf. Team Lone Wolf. Yeah, that's true. I just kind of feel, you know, I've touched on this in past episodes. I don't want to go too deep on it, but I just feel like there are stories there that I think could be told, and I think you could sell it to the average person, especially to new players, because it's very confusing to a new player. You're like, well, who am I rooting for? Which team are we rooting for? I'm like, well, that guy's on that team, but he's not sponsored by that team, so he only just tested with them. Well, wait, he tested with the rival? Yeah. They all sat in a room together. They all played each other, and then now at the Pro Tour, they're not on different teams. Yeah, but they're on the same team, but they're not on the same team, but they're all wearing different shirts. Like, it's so
when they wind up playing against each other, and it's that there's no other real sport that happens in, and it feels clunky, and that it's sort of like, you know, hey, I went to the football game the other day, and for the most part, the San Diego Chargers played the Buffalo Bills. Although over here there was a matchup where the Buffalo Bills quarterback got sacked by the Buffalo Bills offensive tackle. It's like, no, it doesn't happen. Like, teams are distinct. You know, I wonder if one day they may change the Swiss system to accommodate avoiding team pairings when possible. Such a thing could be very interesting, especially.
I agree. Yeah.
I mean, anything's possible, right? They've shown a huge willingness to slay their sacred cows. Yeah. You know what? Why should cows be sacred? They've slayed all their sacred chickens in the last few years.
They printed ancestral recall
block
again.
Model, yeah, the block model, printing another fixed ancestral recall, the PTQ system, the Pro Tour formats, changing away from modern and then back to modern again. The whole game is changing. And while I can't exactly, you know, people will be like, oh, they'd never change the Pro Tour to make accommodations for teams.
They would.
It's not to say that they wouldn't. Yeah.
I mean, the one thing I thought about this while watching the Pro Tour was it's one rule would make it work. Just limit the teams so you can only have so many people on it. Five people.
They defined a team as officially like up to 8 people or something.
Yeah. And then you just, it would be one of those things where it's like,
so then we've got, I would give a 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah, but okay. So here's like for me, right? When I watch the Pro Tour and very quickly you see, they're like, well, there's 3 decks. Wait, Magic is huge. Like, there shouldn't be just 3 decks. And a bunch of like guys who tested by themselves that came up with all these rogue brews. Like, I would like to not see that occur. And I think Wizards' whole argument is like, we don't want standard solves so quickly. Well, then stop allowing 50 of the best players in the world to sit in a castle for a week and break your format. Like, if they just told them, like, guys, you can't do that. Like, I don't know how you enforce it. I don't have the answers to that, but like, that would solve it because you'd have these fractured smaller groups that aren't sharing all the data. And you may end up with more roguish type brews or decks that were built differently, which would be really interesting.
Well, like, so what the articles I'm reading are saying, though, is that this time around, we didn't break the format right away. They're saying this is a relatively immature format. Like, Sam Black and
Sheehan
both pointed out that they're like, there's been less interesting formats where we've honed in on the best deck by the Pro Tour and that settled it. But they both commented, and Sam Black and Chapin, both being brewers I heavily respect, they said that this one, they look at it and they sense we're not there yet. They're like, all we did was follow the powerful cards and respond to the week one metagame, kind of. And it's like, week one metagame was Siege Rhino and Mantis Rider are not really real Magic cards. Also, no one can get Keranos out of play, and Goblin Rabble Master is fast. And so they just sort of
and Elspeth all
arrived at the place where it's like, nothing seems to be outsmarting these really powerful cards. But they both said that they don't believe that this is where it'll stay. Like, they didn't have the time before the Pro Tour to unlock what beats Siege Rhino and Mantis Rider and Rabble Master at the same time, but it's a long time between now and Fate Recycled.
Fate Recycled. You know, it's interesting because I'm on the Magic beta, so I got to play cons about 2 weeks earlier. So, of course, like me and Marcel and Scotty and a few other people, we love to jump on early and then brew really quickly. And I'd brewed Jeskai essentially what Sean McLaren was playing, maybe 5 or 7 cards different. But even that was very quickly when I was looking at the cards, like, this is what I would play. And, you know, Scotty, I think, built the Abzan deck, which is, I don't know if it was that close, but I can't remember. But we were very close. Like, even your first scan through the card, you're like, well, I'm obviously playing Mantis Rider. This is a recurrent lightning bolt. This has got to go in. And then you're like, well, I guess I'm playing Jeskai. What else works in this deck? Well, right. Let's just play Counterburn, essentially, with it. And then all of a sudden...
Oh, go ahead.
I was just saying, like, you start to throw the deck together and you realize, oh, well, then, I mean, Brimaz and Rabomaster are amazing. And if we're playing Burn, Stoke the Flames, that works well. And you just, the deck almost built itself. Like, you're just playing the most powerful things and you're trying to, like, beat them out because you know that there's a Rabble Red deck. So you're like, well, how do I make sure I don't lose to that? And then, you know, I didn't really see the blue-black control deck that only ran two horrible mythics, but hey, that's like what I called last week of the show. I'm like, they're pros. That's what they love to do.
Yeah, like that, you got to look at who was playing it.
Yeah.
It's Andrew Cuneo. And he has played blue-black control.
Every time.
Yeah, he would play blue-black control in, I forget, somebody said something really funny. They're like, we think he was playing blue-black control in, I forget, it was like... in an Avacyn Restored Block Sealed or something. I
wouldn't doubt it. I mean, the guy is... I mean, he could probably play that deck better than anyone. Like, that's his shit, right? He knows what he's doing.
So what I was going to say is that basically, we've agreed that there are two incredibly powerful cards that just don't exist on the same plane of having been pushed as normal people. Like, it's one of those things where you see... you see Siege Rhino, and it's from the same place as Brimaz from Born of the Gods, where it's like, wow, you just threw on everything you wanted, and then put on another keyword for good measure, and then shaved a mana off. Like, I don't even...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, the fact that it just drains and gains? Like, when that card was spoiled, we joked and said, this is okay, I guess. It's kind of like Thragtusk. And I remember when Thragtusk was spoiled, and you're like, nah, that's not that good. And then you see it happen, you're like, this is completely oppressive. And so I wonder if it's going to be Thragtusk-esque again, where that card is very hard to beat. It is
Well, so there's the thing is, there's three other creatures that exist on this curve that people couldn't crack in time for the Pro Tour. And there's Savage Knuckleblade, which, you know, Kibler tried to do it, but nobody solved the Teemer equation. Which isn't to say it can't be solved. It's real early to figure out. But Savage Knuckleblade is a Mantis Rider and Siege Rhino level of card. It's got that kind of...
It feels like it. It does.
It is, right? And so it's an issue of nobody figuring out the right mana base or what the sideboard is helping to bring to the table or how to correctly position it in the metagame. Meanwhile, in Mardu, nobody has gotten there with Butcher of the Horde. That had an overall poor showing. And finally, from Sultai, you've absolutely got that kind of power on Sidisi Brood Tyrant, a.k.a. the mini half a Grave Titan.
And the one thing about Sultai that no one realizes right now is there's not a lot of graveyard hate yet.
No, nah, there's just Aegean Erebos.
Yeah. No one. Yeah, but I mean, like, no one is even considering that. So you have that random card... I think it was, the burn card that exiles the player's graveyard, but it's just so expensive. I don't see anyone playing it. So,
well,
like,
the hate will more likely come in the form of Anafenza stealing some slots.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I look at it this way, like, Knuckleblade is, at first, he was one of the cards I tried to brew with as well. But when you started to realize you're just building a green ramp deck, then you might as well just play green ramp, because Hornet Queen is... fucking crazy. And you know, there's so many cards in mono green ramp that you just do, you need, why play with the colors? Like, you know, it's interesting. And I found in even early testing with, like, Knuckleblade, you could deal with, you know, unless it's like a late game play where they're kind of using it like Aetherling, you know, where they're keeping all the mana up and they're going to get them through. But at that point, you're like, shouldn't this deck be doing something more powerful than that? That's the weird thing. Like, maybe there's a counter, like a heavy counter deck with Knuckleblade, so they get him down, and then you just protect him and hold up counter magic.
I mean, Teemer Charm gets you to that point, kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's one that people haven't cracked, right? Like, it was... Yeah. Junk was already going to be the best deck coming over from block. So Siege Rhino just fell into place. And
I would agree with that.
Boros was already incredible. So all you have to do is splash blue and you get the Mantis Rider. But there's those other three marquee cards of those other three clans that just, I'll be surprised if we don't figure out who Savage Knuckleblade's friends are by the new year. And if people don't start having to respect Sidisi, and then, what's the other one I said? Oh, Butcher of the Horde. You know, that's one where people have been complaining that they don't really know whether you're really supposed to go, like, face, or you're supposed to go real low to the ground and build it more like mono red splashing two colors, or if you want to be strictly mid-range, or if you want to go real deep on the tokens thing. And I think that that's going to... people are going to figure out which one of those is really where you want to be with Mardu. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the only thing is that Jeskai is just a better... like, the cards... like, I feel like the blue splash is better than the black splash. Even though black gets you Thoughtseize, Hero's Downfall, it sounds like it gives you a lot of power, but I feel like Dig Through Time and, like, oh, it's just...
Treasure Cruise?
Yeah, and even Jeskai Charm. Like, it's another four to the face. It's Jeskai Charm's crazy powerful. All your team lifelink to just pull you out of a hole. Like, that card is way better than Mardu Charm. Just saying. That's my only thing, and I wanted to ask you, you know, like, I don't know what you know, if you're a blue player, black player, like, what's your color of identity in Magic, but if it is at all blue, Dig Through Time seems broken as all fuck. I'm curious what you think.
I have played all colors in equal proportions in my day, so I have not had the opportunity to cast a Dig Through Time yet. I will soon. Today, I put together Yuya's top 8 deck, which is the Jeskai aggro that does not have digs. It's the one that really is much closer to a red burn deck because it plays the Jet and the Strike and the Stoke, along with Seeker of the Way. So it pounds the ground a little more traditionally than Sean McLaren's. I'm waiting to acquire the Dig Through Times, then maybe I'll change it. I can't wait to cast them, though. That is for sure.
Yeah, that card, I just for the Pro Tour, when online prices were spiking, because I had pulled two in just drafting, and I was like, man, I should just get another two before they go up too much, because I was like, is this the next Sphinx's Revelation? And when you start to play with it, you're like, this card's fucking broken. I should not be allowed to do this for two mana. Hmm. Like, this is crazy. Like, oh, man. And even Treasure Cruise. As stupid as that card sounds,
that card's not stupid. That card's awesome. Well, in the right shell, of course.
Right. I mean, but in like standard, it feels like
yeah. In standard, that's a little different. Yeah.
But man, in limited, that card is a house. A house. I did though. I did want to ask Kevy because if you know Spruik, he's a red player too.
I despise blue cards.
He is a red player to his core. I have tried for the last 3 or 4 or 5 years. I don't even know how long. I've tried to push him the closest I've pushed him away from red is I got him to play white, only because of Boros Charm.
The best new red card is a blue card that draws you 3 more red cards.
Exactly. That's what I've been like, you know, Matty, you know, threw that out there. He's like, you know, he's like, you could just, you could play mono red in modern with, you know, this ancestral recall now. And, I, like, at first I just kind of shrugged it off and then I started paying more attention to it. And it's like, my normal, burn deck that I play with is a red, white, black burn deck in modern. And I've tried to do different builds and stuff like that. And like the biggest thing, like losing black, I lose Bump in the Night and I lose Bob. And the biggest problem with that is
you can't lose Bump in the Night.
I was just going to say, it's sacrilege that you're talking about cutting that card.
It's kind of funny. Like you were actually mid story earlier. I was just sitting here goldfishing through my deck. And like, as I was like, I drew a Bump in the Night off the top. I was like, oh, I want to bring that up. But you know, of course you were talking and I figured that would be a terrible reason to interrupt you. I like losing those two cards. I mean, it's a big deal because that's a 1-mana 3 to the face that really, really needs to be there because there aren't enough of those in Magic. But like losing Bob, I lose all my card draw. And, you know, I've got a, I built a red-white version of the deck that runs things like Helix isn't fast enough in that deck. It needs to cost one mana for the most part, except for Boros Charm because you get that extra damage out of it. But leaving behind Bob, I was like, okay, well, I need like Helix in here so I can pad this deck a little bit so that I can gain that extra little bit of life because I'm not getting that card drawn. I might need to survive a couple of extra turns. So then I kind of ported that into the Treasure Cruise into that because I was like, well, shit, that actually makes a lot of sense. I've got a butt ton of cards just laying in my graveyard. I literally have I could have four or five cards in my graveyard by turn two with that deck. And so I was like, shit, man, this is actually, by the time I actually need to draw cards, you know, on turn three or four, drawing three cards, I'm definitely going to have that one, or, you know, I'm going to have it down to costing one, very, very quickly. Well, quicker than most decks are going to have their yard filled up. And so it actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. A couple things to comment on there. One, are you thinking Monastery Swift Spear? Because it is the new Goblin Guide.
I was thinking about it a little bit, but I also am weary of putting any more creatures in the deck because it's essentially a burn deck. I mean, it's flat out a burn deck, but I mean, there are creatures that are just too good, like Goblin Guide. Hellspark Elemental is basically a lightning bolt anyway. For a bolt for two. But a recurable bolt. And then Vexing Devil is one of those cards where it's
Vexing Devil's good.
Too hard not to, but like, I feel like bringing any more creatures into this deck is just taking it away from being a burn deck and turning it into an aggro deck. I was even talking today about, Marcel brought up the point, you know, I we got to find another reason to go to splash blue in the deck. Besides just this, and he brought, you know, we were talking about Snapcaster, which is good because I can recur those bolts and stuff. But then I honestly thought Delver might be a better idea in the deck. But I'm weary of even putting Delver or Snapcaster in the deck because yet again, I'm turning this now into like the reason I cannot give a shit about what's going on in the board and the reason I can win games as consistently as I do with this deck is because I do, like, all it takes is just a blocker just hanging out and being in the way. Just all they need to do is get out something quick and dumb. Now, if I have, if my spells are just hitting their face, then I'm good. You know, with Hellspark, I'm good because it tramples over that early game. But like, as soon as they can get just even, you know, a couple little token creatures, a couple little dumb things down, all of a sudden those things on the, like, those creatures don't get the job done it just gives them enough to stabilize so my deck can't work fast enough. So I'm kind of worried, or I'm weary of putting any more creatures in the deck, I guess is where I was going with it.
A couple things about that then. I mean, so I played Legacy Burn for a while, and mm-hmm. now I play Blue-Red Burn in Legacy.
Uh-huh.
So I'm very sympathetic to like what you're saying, and it definitely hurt me over time as I saw the fire blasts and the chain lightnings start to leave my Legacy deck, because, you know, more Goblin Guides and more just quality things were happening. But mm-hmm. I would argue that you at least have to look at the penetration power of Swift Spear as being yes. similar to that of Hellspark Elemental. Right, so at a minimum,
yeah,
it's
about as good as Goblin Guide because it's hitting for one, but then probably three with haste, just like Goblin Guide hits for two and then two.
Right.
Meanwhile, though, like Hellspark is blanked and zeroed in these same situations that Swift Spear is blanked and zeroed because like Hellspark can't get through for an ass of four or larger. Which really kind of limit on Swift Spear, right? Because Swift Spear, if your opponent has an X3, like Wild Nacatl or something, and your Swift Spear doesn't have what it takes to get through it, then you probably aren't really doing what your deck's supposed to do right. I'm thinking you would find him better than Hellspark over time.
Yeah, my thoughts were exactly... Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I would get rid of Hellspark. I would play my only creatures would have to all be one drops. So what I would consider is Swift Spear, Goblin Guide, Vexing Devil, because it's a burn spell. It never actually is a creature. So let's not even talk about him. So it's Delver, Goblin Guide, and Swift Spear. Those are the ones I would play. And then everything else is a burn spell, literally, because
except for Treasure Cruise.
For fuel, cruise. Right? Like, because the problem with Bob that I found, like, because I test with Kevy a bit, is Bob just sat there, and yeah, he would draw you a card, but sometimes that would kill you. And sometimes he didn't
I rarely ever have to worry about it killing me. Bob's good in the sense that, like, it's getting that card every fucking turn, and in my deck, I know that...
I don't know, dude. It died a lot, and you know what?
Well, no, and that's the thing, and that's why I brought, like, as I was talking to people about it today, that's why I feel this route with Treasure Cruise is a better idea, because the problem is like, when I cast Bob, it's like, because I know I'm going to need these extra cards before I run out of gas, and everybody else knows that too, and Bob will take a bolt, and that's it. I mean, like, I'm wasting time.
There's nothing, I'll tell you this, there's nothing that makes me feel good playing against you is when you put Bob out. I'm like, I have time.
You're
like,
all right, sweet.
I know, because the first thing I go is, great, I have a turn to dig something.
And
to
the
find
other
something.
Thing that really matters there, too, is it's like, you know, paying two for Bob, I mean, you know, sure, he's a creature, but which is a plus and minus at times, like, you know, him being a creature, you can get rid of him, you can use removal to get rid of him if you want. But then it's also, I'm waiting until my next turn to be able to draw anything. Like, with this, like, with Treasure Cruise, it's like, sweet, I need cards now. And... you know, likely I'm going to be able to cast it for one. And when I cast it for one on turn, you know, four, that means I've still got three mana open to cast those burn spells that I'm drawing off of him anyway.
Sucks about Bob is that I think you have to remember why you're playing burn. And I think the reason for that, at least what I liked about burn, especially Legacy Burn, is that you steadily convert one mana into three damage, meaning you've almost always dealt 18 by turn three.
Right.
And if not, a land hasn't held them, you are, like, guaranteed to finish them off from there, right? I think one of the reasons that I've always felt a sigh of relief when my burn opponents played Dark Confidant is I thought to myself, okay, it's going to be a longer grind, like, they're going to have more gas going long,
yes.
But you just took off turn two from dealing six damage.
Right, exactly. Like, that's six damage that I am not
six
dealing.
Damage on turn two.
Right, yeah. That is six damage that I am not dealing to you, and that's basically me waiting around with this fragile thing. And before it was, like, that's the thing, is, like, before Bob was kind of that, the way that I could get card draw. I mean, red doesn't have card draw. and so I was like, all right, well, I can get into black because of Bump of the Night. Thank you, Spruik. Because of Bump of the Night, which was awesome, because it was just yet again another, like, one of those ever crucial three damage to the face for one mana. You know, no drawback. You know, this isn't Shard Volley where I got a sack of land for it. You know, it's another Lava Spike. And there aren't enough of those. Like, I mean, shit, if they just print one more one mana three damage spell, I'd be fucking set and I wouldn't need to stick other things. But
I hope they never do.
There's a few other things I wanted to mention here, too.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is that, for one, I mean, it kind of stinks that we told you, like, what changes you should make to your deck, but we're really just telling you about a different deck. It's a deck that's been doing very well in Modern. Like, I forget who first piloted this to success, but we just suggested a change to your creature base that makes it nothing but Delver's Guides and Swift Spears, which is basically the blue-red Modern Delver deck that's popular right now.
Yeah, right.
The other thing I should mention is that nobody is playing Modern, and Modern is over. Go home, no fun, until they get around to banning Jeskai Ascendancy, because I'm sorry, but you're dealing 18 by turn 3 is not sufficient. We are not impressed.
Yeah,
no, that is true. Yeah, but what is has been, like, nice is, like, I mean, because I'm running, like, Eidolon helps, like, Eidolon the Great Rebel helps, which, of course...
That's absolutely true.
If I get rid of all my creatures except for Swift Spear, Goblin Guide, and Delver, that means I'm not running Eidolon anymore. But Eidolon helps, you know, like the speed that the deck does have, plus having Eidolon, plus having thing, you know, sideboard options like fucking wear and tear, shit like that. This deck does lend itself to being a lot more resilient against Jeskai Ascendancy combo than a lot out there.
Yeah, but his matchup versus Ascendancy isn't bad.
Are you willing to main deck Eidolon?
I am main decking.
That's a metagame call.
I'm running four Eidolons main deck.
Awesome. Yeah, that's amazing because that is a way to play a creature that's a burn spell when they kill it.
Yeah,
exactly. and it's worked out well. That was one of those things I went through, like we talked about before, but like that I went through where I didn't give the card the respect it deserved when it was spoiled, and it took me kind of seeing the way it needed to operate, and I was like, holy shit, I'm always going to win this race. And, you know, it's worked out well. Eidolon's a great creature. Even with this, going from red, white, black to, like, the red, white build that I've now started, you know, wanted to put some blue in for that card draw, even in the red, white version, I wasn't dealing with it killing me yet. Because, I mean, it's that fragile boundary with Eidolon. It's like, holy shit, you know, is this card going to kill me before I kill them? Especially in a deck where all of my spells that I cast are going to hit me from Eidolon.
Your Treasure Cruise.
Yeah, not my... yeah, not...
That's right.
And then also, it's like, you know, I've got the fact that, like, that is another reason in red-white when I lost the card draw from Bob and to be able to get to those answers a little bit quicker. I started actually, you know, finally coming around and running Helix, and that extra little bit of life gain, I think, helps a bit. I'm not taking the hit from Treasure Cruise, and then I can get to those burn spells that I'm taking two off and you're taking three for, so.
The only thing that I'm going to caution you on is, if you do decide to go in this direction, Treasure Cruise needs, like, what, 11 fetch lands? Like, you need to be...
I'm running 9 for it.
Okay. I mean, you have to be careful, because that is also damage that eats up, and there are matches where...
What's that?
Is Lavamancer in Modern?
Oh, yeah.
From what set?
M13, I think he was in. He was in one of the M13. Right.
He was just in a core set last year. Yes, well, anyway, I play Lavamancer in the Legacy deck. And Legacy, I mean, the creatures are bigger there, and he should be more outclassed. But if he's good enough for my Legacy deck, which he is, he's good enough for Modern. He stops a lot of random shit. And he helps you against Affinity, and he helps you against Mana Accelerants of all.
You know what is fucking? I've been finding in that deck another fucking newer card or another new card that has been fucking awesome against Affinity and Goyf is fucking Deflecting Palm. That shit it never ceases to amaze me every time I get hit for like 6 infect or 8 infect, and I'm
isn't it the best? I love. Oh, when the infect player does that, you're just like, Deflecting Palm game?
Yeah.
It's so good. Like,
Deflecting Palm is a gross fucking spell.
We did a whole episode, I think, on it because
we don't need to delve deeper.
Yeah, we can't. But we were literally blown away by how crazy it was. And I played in the MDSS Modern tournament a couple weeks ago where all the new cons cards were legal. So it was the first time seeing that card play in top level terrorists.
Like, talking about it a lot was one thing. I was like, oh, it could do this. Oh, it could do this. But then it's just while you're playing and you're just like, yeah, suit that guy up. Oh, do it. Just do it. Come on, you son of a bitch, swing. And they do. And you're like, oh, you actually did it. Like, you know, like they know what's in your hand. You know, this is a brand new card. Nobody's expecting. Everybody I would play against is all, oh, I got this. This is no problem. I'm playing a burn player. And on turn two, he didn't do anything. He just left his mana open. Oh, that means he's got a handful of land, and they swing in, and I'm like, nah, how about you take that? And, if they don't swing in, you're like, okay, cool, I'll just use the Boros Charm then, and then I'll go to my next turn. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful fucking card to play with.
Well, especially in your deck, because you're always bluffing end-of-turn burns, so they'd never know. They'd never know that you were holding it.
Yeah.
So it's sweet. Anyways, we're going to move on because I know our fans are just groaning at us talking about that card.
Sick of Deflecting Palm, I'm sure. That's why I wanted to talk a bunch about Treasure Cruise tonight, but I think we already, you know, beat that one on the ground too.
Yeah,
can we pause?
Yes. Okay. We can 100%.
The current time is 1:12. Let's pause for 2 minutes. I need to refresh my water.
All right, go.
No problem.
So, well, Spruik is getting a drink.
We're going to keep talking. You know how that goes.
There's no pot. Like, that's the funny thing. I know if you've ever been a guest in the show, you're like, wow, When are they going to cut that out? They're not. This is.
What's going to be sweet is when I just leave too and don't tell you, and you're just there by yourself.
I'm doing it myself. I will say though, we've got quite a list of questions from the Twitter hole, so we're gonna be jumping into those soon, folks. See what we got. See how Sprook takes to these. We should have made him a drink. Do we have a bartender yet in this cave? Why don't we have that?
No, I've got one in my cave.
I know you've upgraded. I don't know how you got your own little cave room in the cave. Oh, you got a cave in a cave. Sweet.
It was in my contract. I just didn't tell you anything about it. It was like, you know, once we were approaching episode 100, if we made it that far, then I would get my own cave and my own bartender and all sorts of shit. It was one of those things. KYT was just like, oh, hey, don't.
You'll never get there. Yeah.
Like, no, KYT's like, don't tell Maddie because I can only afford to do it for one of you. And I'm pretty sure you're the one that needs a bartender. So just don't tell Maddie. And I was like, all right. That's
I thought but it was actually, one of those.
Another little tidbit of trivia that like Patreon thing that KYT is doing right now to try to raise money for Amanda to Prime. That's actually so he can get you a bartender.
Oh, no way. Oh, fuck.
Yeah. He's trying to get all this money together on his Patreon, which you guys should all go fucking put money towards. And that money is so that Maddie can have a sweet little cave and a bartender like me.
Oh man, I cannot say that we don't need that. That is definitely on my list.
I got this great idea, Maddie. You should next level it, and you should just throw a whole bunch of money at it. Like you should just throw as much as it would cost for a bartender and a cave at his Patreon account.
I think that could work. I don't know. Knowing KYT, he'd find some cheap way around it to hire some cheap shitty midget bartender or something that probably couldn't reach the drinks high enough to get to the top of the bar. But
he'll just pocket the money and show up at your house every once in a while and make you a drink.
He'll just send me a shaker in the mail.
Hey, well, there you go.
Here's your bartender.
Remember those old Nintendo, like the original NES? Remember the little robot thing that you could
Yeah,
I wonder if you could fucking make that thing mix.
Oh, we could hack it? Yeah, we could hack it. I actually YouTube that. I'm pretty sure someone's done that.
I hope. So, well, actually, I hope not, because I'm sure it can be done, and I hope nobody has thought of that yet. If we could the NES robot to fucking mix cocktails, I would be, what would be sweet is it's small enough I could just throw it in my backpack and bring it to GPs and shit.
Oh, wow. That's pretty sweet. I will say, have you seen the AT-AT that is a ice bucket?
No, I have not seen that, and I'm upset.
Oh man, I almost wanted to buy it off. I saw it on Etsy or somewhere, and some guy had taken a toy AT-AT and he'd carved out the inside and he put it like an insulated bucket. And so the top of the AT-AT comes off. It's got your ice. Oh my god, it was so sweet, dude.
That is way rad. I
know.
Great idea.
Wizard's Den, here we come, man.
And then you could get like the fucking toy Millennium Falcon, and you can start hiding your weed in the little smuggler compartments.
Ah, yes. I'm sure Marcel has that already. What are we talking about?
He's just all, what are you talking about, man? This is just my Star Wars toys.
He's like, man, the last time I made the Kessel Run in under 3
years. Yeah, exactly.
this is, what is it? It's a new hope, man. The new hope in there. So, folks, so we are about to enter episode 100 soon. And I know
enter the Twitter hole universe. We're not entering episode 100 for like another 6 to 8 months.
Yeah.
I mean, a week.
A week. Yeah. Well, we'll see. There's a lot of post and pre stuff I've got to figure out how to get there. So we'll make it happen. We'll make it happen. We're not going to pull an 18 on you.
We'll find a way to do it.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. But while we're waiting for Sprook, Kevy, I wanted to take a couple
Sprook's here.
Oh, he's Sprook back. Is back. Sweet. Whoa.
Yeah, when you went to go get a drink of water, we realized we're like, wait, we don't take breaks here. We could just keep talking while Sprook is getting a drink.
Oh, yeah. See, I did the timestamp because I thought you were going to – most casts, if we take a break, we edit. But then most of the time we're streaming and we have like 15 minutes of dead air to –
Yeah, this one, hell no. And not that we mind that you went to go get a drink, because a lot of times I could go do the same shit. I just go mix a cocktail.
I bought water. I'm just talking about freshening my voice, because I'm going hoarse from having so many opinions over here.
And that's But no, that's a good thing. Like, at least you're not like, oh, yeah, that's cool. All right. Yeah, that's it.
So for your 100th episode, yes. I don't know if you guys are both current with Bump, but
I'm not current with Bump. So I said I am not quite current with Bump, so don't spoil anything
for me. Well, for my 50th episode, and maybe Maddie will know, I did a thing I called the Bumpocalypse, which was the first 50 episodes all flown through really fast and mixed together as fast as I could do them. So,
can you imagine?
What's that?
How rad it would be if we shoved. I said, could you imagine how rad it would be if we shoved 99 episodes that are almost 3 hours a piece into as fast as we could possibly do it, but just this? So it's just.
Okay, yeah, so not like that. But if you guys want to take inspiration from the same thing, maybe I picked the bump of the week from each of the first 50 episodes and just flew through them all in order. Trying to mix them so fast that it was only like a minute to 2 minutes from each song. And it's pretty crazy. It was kind of like a tour de force. I had a lot of fun with it. But then if you guys were to do something like take, I don't know, the funniest or wildest thing to happen on every episode of Heavy Meta for the first 100 episodes, like snip out the funniest 30 seconds or something and make a big comp episode of those.
I think Maddie should do that. I think since Maddie edits the podcast, I think Maddie should totally do that.
I have toyed with that idea many times. Unfortunately, many of the most funniest things are 15 to 20 minutes long. Yeah. There really isn't.
It's not a funny clip. It's a 15 minute rant
story.
Or
because you hear it out of context and you're just like, what? I don't know. Maybe we'll see. It's very hard to find the time. But
we talked about a lot of different ideas that we're gonna do, and this is what I think is kind of fun. You know, for the listeners that are guessing what we're gonna do for 100 is like we've had a shit ton of ideas. We've bounced
lower your expectations.
Lower your expectations. We're probably not going to do anything. we're probably going to take a vacation. We've got lots of ideas we've bounced around, and there's some of them that have worked their way up to the top, some of them that have kind of fallen off, you know, whether it be because they're just too time consuming, whether I came up with them and they were just stupid ideas. There's a lot of different reasons some of these ideas have risen to the top and some of them have fallen off pretty quickly. But we got some stuff in store. We got things going on.
Yeah. Now, Spruik, so that you know, we once an episode, once I guess once every episode now, we have this thing where we dive deep and sticky. I don't know. I don't remember how it gets, but we dive very deeply into the
Twitter hole.
Into the Twitter hole. Now, sometimes this hole can get offensive. Sometimes it can get obscure. Sometimes we go off the rails. But that's just how the show rolls. So, strap in. We're about to go in. Do not take offense to anything you hear for the next 40 minutes. But your opinion matters, and you're part of this. So, let's go.
I can handle the Twitter hole. I told you guys about my weird Twitter stories earlier.
Well, this motherfucker knows more about the Twitter hole than we do, like, 100 times over.
I've already had multiple physical violence threats today. Beat that.
Oh man! Okay. Wow. Well,
I can't. I have physically threatened multiple people today.
That's true. We start jihadist war with other casts. That's our fan base does. All right. So we're jumping in. So first question asked is Jim Castle. He apparently told me that his name is not PHROST underscore. It's Frost. PH is silent. Thank you, Jim, for correcting me. But he says, as this episode is the great one, what is the greatest episode of Heavy Meta? Now, I don't know if Spruik listens to the cast, but if I had to weigh in, I think the single greatest episode that I'm most proud of is probably...
It's probably the one that I missed.
Yeah, no. I think it's a toss-up between the J-Boo shit story, the werewolf shit stories, and Summer of a Movie... Or maybe even the first telling of the midget story.
The midget story?
Yeah. Remember the midget
one?
That one was pretty epic, man. I don't know.
Are you referring to the gentleman who goes by the Twitter handle Heavy Meta Midget?
It was not actually.
That's actually where that guy got his Twitter handle from.
I thought it was because he was really short. But that guy's Gerald. I met him. I've signed a playset of Bump in the Nights for him. He's very cool. He came out to see me spin.
Nice. I met him at the MDFS. Cool dude.
That gentleman is an amazing person. And yes, his Twitter persona is because of the midget story and then midget stories that ensued afterward on episode.
I don't know if you know the spook, but there's an odd, what would you call it? It's a birthing of characters. This show is really in the fantasy aspect of things. Like, you know, the reality kind of blurs its lines, and I don't know if that's the Kraken or if it's just weaving of tales, but we have a lore and a legend. There are Wolverines, there are midgets, there's giant robots. I mean, and so people who listen to us tell these stories, they kind of like adopt things. Or maybe they really are these people. I don't know. I mean, the Heavy Metal Wolverine could actually be the Wolverine I threw beers at and got drunk. I'm not sure.
I'm offended that there is a Heavy Metal Midget, a Heavy Metal Wolverine, yet there is not a Twitter account for a Heavy Metal Cheeseburger.
Well, hey, make it happen before episode 100.
No shit.
Gerald was a really nice guy. However, I can't say his Twitter handle name out loud because I understand that the term midget is considered offensive. So I always refer to him as Heavy Metal Little Person.
Heavy Metal Little Person. I like it.
Oh my god, that's pretty sweet. Jim also has another question: is what's your favorite card from Khans of Tarkir? So Spruik, why don't you take that one?
Okay. So far, I have not played with it yet in any constructed format. I've only played with it in limited. And so I would have to say that it is the my favorite card from Khans of Tarkir is Sam's Step Citadel.
Really?
I don't even know what that card does.
There has been like two in every deck I've drafted in this format. I take Sam's Step Citadels like nothing. I've picked Sandstep Citadels over most rares.
Why? For fixing? What does that even do?
It adds white, green, and black to your mana pool.
Oh, okay. Sorry. It's the I didn't know the name. It's the Abzan Triland.
Yes.
There
that
you go.
Triland. My favorite card in Khans of Tarkir so far. I'm sorry. That's the worst possible answer. But
that's horrible.
I gotta be honest. It is responsible for more wins of mine than anything else.
Trilands are decent. I think the favorite card so far is just the Mantis, man. That thing is... I love it. I've been playing with that thing.
Talking about Mantis Rider?
Mantis Rider, man. Whew. That card is just... It's a lightning bolt that just sits there with vigilance. Just stops attacks. Oh, I love it. Just
you know
flies over coursers.
My favorite card from fucking Khans of Tarkir is...
Let me guess. A both?
Huh? No.
Oh, it's the fucking fog.
We spent like two fucking episodes talking about that card.
All right, well, we're gonna move it on. Jim also asked, how many questions of mine do you have to answer before I'm the talent? Well, I'm not going to even acknowledge that because I
don't let's not answer it. So the answer is apparently three.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Ron from Direct Damage Cast asks, what if Proxy Guy's baseless speculation of GP Vegas... Which I don't know if you're gonna. Oh, I mean, if there is a GP's Vegas, I'm praying we get an announcement soon. But Proxy Guy had speculated for Usberg that if they did it, imagine if it was a Vintage Masters in print, one time only weekend. I think I would literally shit my pants. Like that would be.
Oh, yeah.
So his speculation is that he would shit his pants.
No,
I believe that speculation.
I believe.
Actually, no, I disbelieve it because every time people have said they're going to shit their pants, and I'm a guy who says it very often, no one has ever shit their pants. At least not with surprise.
Not during one of those situations.
Surprise. I have followed through when it's related to eating Mexican food. Like if I said, like,
right.
If I
not
eat
when,
that meal, I'll shit my pants.
Right, not when it's related to a surprise thing, when it's related to something that you knew damn good and well was going to happen.
Oh my goodness. All right, so next question on the thing is we've got going to the hole. Brendan Nadsat underscore B. He asks us, Maddie, what the hell happened with Kraken? I'm like, when can we buy Kraken with Kevin Metal's face on it? Holy cow. Let me just tell you something. If Kevin Metal's face was a limited production run of Kraken, that shit would sell.
Like, I would buy all of them and just put them all over my house.
I don't know why they don't do that. Maybe we should just make stickers and you guys can buy them and you can go deface your local liquor store.
Go deface all the Kraken bottles. I think it's a good idea.
There you go.
They finally decide to just put my face on the bottle.
Yeah. Sometimes you gotta go viral on this shit to get there. Go on.
That segues into, Steam Flogger Josh asks, how much money does the SVU have to raise for Kevin Metal to get a Kraken Rum tramp stamp, and where do I send my money? I'm gonna say that tattoo's gonna run me about $300, and I'm gonna say to my house, because that probably wouldn't take much convincing. Like, I literally would probably just do it to spite the world. Be like, fuck yeah, I got a Kraken tramp stamp, why the fuck not?
With the don't you have to put a bottle of Kraken in you?
No, you'd have to put a bottle of Kraken in me. I've got a lot of pointless tattoos. I spent a lot of time...
kids. You can't get tattoos while inebriated.
You're not allowed.
You're talking to the wrong guy. That's how you got all of them, isn't it?
You can certainly give them while you're inebriated and your friends have a tattoo machine. Kids. But
yeah, if you have a tattoo machine in your house, all the rules go out the window.
That was such a terrible idea.
Yeah, that is worse. That is worse than having liquor in your house.
I have so many regrettable, not regrettable, because I don't regret any of them, but I've got so many what most people would consider regrettable tattoos that because of shit like that, that like, yeah, you're not going to faze me by having me get a Kraken tramp stamp. I'd wear that shit proudly.
So do you ever like buy a new board game or something and you notice that there's a certain accessory in it that there's just not that many, like, sheets of, like, character sheets or score sheets or, like, game pads that you're going to need one of every time you play the game. But it's not a very thick pad of them, and you're, like, flip through it, and you're like, it looks like I'm only going to be able to play this game, like, 15 times. And so you feel kind of apprehensive every time you
play. I think I know where you're going.
Yeah?
I think I know where you're going.
Like, that's how I'd feel if I got a tattoo machine in my own house. I feel like I have this new game, but I only realistically could play it about a dozen times.
I had no idea where you were going with this. I was like, I'm going to get a life pad tattooed on my fucking thigh. I'm just going to start using it at F&M.
That's got to be one of the most in-depth analogies I've heard.
That was very a beautiful well analogy, but you were going a completely different direction. You're like, oh man, I'm only going to be able to use it so many times. I, on the other hand, am a glass half full kind of guy. It's like, yeah, well shit, I'll just tattoo the games, you know, the gamepad on my legs. I've got two legs. I got plenty of space. I mean, how many games am I actually going to buy? I don't need that many. I'll just tattoo those pads on myself so that I can use those as life pads permanently.
Oh, the original flavor text of Spellbook from its first printing back in, like, Weatherlight was, like, she wrote until the pages were completely covered in black ink, then she grabbed white ink and started again.
Oh! Yeah.
I love it.
So that's your approach when you run out of skin.
I like that. Dude, that's freaky, man. All right, we got another question. Luke Narianan asks us, was the big surprise from the Pro Tour the fact that they did not reveal Modern Masters 2?
It's not gonna be Modern Masters 2, it's gonna be fucking M14-2 and they're gonna have it in Winnipeg.
Look, man, I don't know. I honestly, they've got another Pro Tour before they probably have to announce anything in Vegas in May, so.
Yeah, look at it this way. It is in June, right? Or it's gonna be Modern Masters, end of May, June. Right. So, we don't know the spring set yet.
Yeah.
Right.
We don't. That would be going out of sequence. We don't actually even know the full details about the new Commander launch or anything that's going to come out between spring or winter and spring sets. It's just a right. little ahead of the gun. You gotta. We're not going to hear about Modern Masters 2 until we've gotten set information for the new spring set and yep. the final core set.
I think it's just a big, you know, one, I think, like, with our fan base and stuff, because we've kept, we, you know, we keep touting this, we want to do the SVU, like, event this year, and that would be the perfect time and place for it. And then all of a sudden it was like, the very little information we do have is just like, all of a sudden we know that something really big is happening that weekend, because they've got, like, was it like three different places throughout the world, you know, booked for that weekend, ready to go, but nobody knows what it is. So of course everybody assumes it's going to be Modern Masters 2. And it's, I think it's just like the little bit of information that we do have is just spawning this, like, it has to be Modern Masters 2. And gotta do it in Vegas. And it's gonna be that fucking weekend. It's gonna be awesome. But because we're all, you know, wanting to actually start making plans for it, now we're grasping at straws, so.
It's very likely that whatever that winds up being, I cannot be a part of it. It's very close to my intended wedding.
Ah, oh. That's totally understandable, though.
That's okay, just switch it.
Switch the wedding? Yeah.
Yeah, just have it there, man. Just say, you know what, we're doing an early honeymoon, we're doing it in Vegas, let's do this. Make it happen, Sprue.
Sprue can make many things happen.
But not
when
that.
He says he's going to marry somebody. He married somebody.
Nice.
That's right. Well, we're not saying don't marry that somebody. We're just saying do it in Vegas around a bunch of drunken magic friends of yours. I'm kidding.
All right. So the Twitter hole is being populated right now in my feed by none other than the Woo Master himself, Jay Boosh. And he has five tweets in a row. This is a complicated fucking question. But you know what? We're going to tackle it because that's what we do, Jay.
Oh, no.
So here we go. He goes, what do you hate most about other people in the community? Specifically, not I hate that Magic players are fat, sweaty nerds, but more like I hate the sound of KYT's voice or how stupid Marcel's face is. What do you like most about who specifically? Also, these are serious questions. I don't think you should hold back. I think criticism and praise are both equally good. And I would love to actually hear someone talk about something honestly. Wow. Holy shit, Jay. There's a ball of wax in someone's mouth. All right, well, let's see. So what do I hate about anyone specifically in this Magic community? I hate that Kevin Metal doesn't play any other color besides red.
I play black and white.
Nah, but you don't. But, okay, like, my biggest gripe is, like, I would love to see you play green, blue counter. Like, I would like to see you grow. And maybe that's a cop out. Maybe it isn't, but I think
I'm already like 6 feet tall. I'm fine.
I know. Well, the, you see, your counter should have been motherfucker. I'm putting Treasure Cruise in a deck. Cut me some slack.
Yeah. See, I'm branching out. I played fucking Saito's red green aggro deck for a little while, and now I'm
that's
putting Treasure
true.
Cruise. I've covered all five colors, motherfucker.
That is true. That is true. What do I like? Who do I like most? I think, you know, you may not like Marcel's face. That's fine. That's, you know, I thought he's quite a handsome man myself, but.
Marcel. I hung out with him in person when I was in San Francisco randomly. Yeah. He sniped me for a hangout, and I found his face entirely pleasant.
Yeah, right? I thought it was
nice. He's a beautiful man.
Yeah, I think Marcel's generosity, I think, is something a lot of people don't give enough props to. So that would be something.
He introduced me to pupusas, and then we both yes. put pupusas into our faces, our pleasant faces, together. But separate. Oh, the faces were separate, but the activity of putting pupusas into them was shared.
There you go. So, Kevy, what do you hate? Who? I guess Jay is more like trying to stir up the Twitter hive of bees. Yeah.
Who do you
hate? What Goro do you hate, sir?
That's a hard question. I don't know. I don't necessarily say I hate anybody. Like, maybe Alex Bertoncini. No, I'm kidding. Who specifically do I hate? I don't know that I, like, hate anybody, like, at all in the Magic community. I mean, shit, we all play Magic. We all have a good time. Some people get on my fucking nerves. I'll tell you that. But I don't hate anybody.
You know, I guess I'll be honest, there is something I do hate about the Magic community, and that is the way people attack everyone for Not that it, there's no reason.
Are we talking like things that we hate in the Magic community? That's different.
I think it's more people, but in general, I'm getting at like people who just are trying to have fun and enjoy the game. And certain people attack them for no reason just because like, well, that's not how I do it. I think like sometimes that, I don't think that's healthy for the game. Yeah. I think we're mostly positive people though. Like, there's not too much negativity that I could give a shit too much that bothers me enough to even mention it. So yeah, like I like
you know what positive. I hate about the Magic community is the fact that, okay, so every fucking spoiler season, you know, people, this shit happens, you know, cards have come out and everybody has an opinion. Some people are fucking way more into their opinion than others, but regardless, whether you think the card is amazing, whether you think the card is great, whether you think it's a pile of trash and you are absolutely against it and everybody else likes it, whatever the case may be, that's not the part I'm talking about that I hate. What I hate is then eventually we all get used to it, or changes for that matter too, not necessarily just new cards, but just changes, where we all either freak out about it or we all jump for joy. And then, you know, after a couple months, everything's fine and you're just used to it and it's not a big deal, or you learn to like the card and it's not a big deal. That's fucking great. And then when it happens again, the next spoiler season, and you try to call somebody out and be like, oh yeah, but remember when, you know, you thought this was the end of the world and it's not? And they're like, no, but this is different. I've been like, you know, I've been in this Magic community long enough now to see that it's the cycle that happens every fucking time. We all freak the fuck out. What? You're changing the legendary rule? You can't fucking do that. Magic's gonna break. And then everything's normal again in a couple months and everything's fine. And then it's just like, what? You can't print that card? There's no fucking way. It's broken. I'm like, yeah, but remember you said that shit about the legendary wool? Yeah, but that was different. This is the end of Magic. And then the next couple months passes and that thing is normal. And then it's like, wait a second. You can't print Ancestral Recall again. And it's I don't know. It's one of those things that just drives me nuts that like nobody will look back and be like, oh yeah, I threw a fuck. I mean, I do the same shit. I think this is the greatest card in the world and then realize that it's not, or vice versa. I think it's garbage and then it's awesome. But then there's so many people in the Magic community that just swear that this time it's for real. And it drives me insane. So
new
stop
business
doing
idea. I'm going to make this site this weekend, super easy to do. All right, it's called On the Board. It's a Twitter bot that you can tweet at, and it will save your opinion for all posterity. And
yes,
put it in a place where it's loggable under your name, so you can go to ontheboard.com,
yes,
somebody's Twitter name, and see all the things that they chose to have saved.
And you can search keywords too, because you're like, remember when you were talking about the legendary rule and you just search legendary and everything they've ever fucking said that had the words legendary in it comes up. And then it'll be easier to find that tweet that you can just throw in their face.
Man, I don't want to be on that board.
I like it. Oh yeah. The shit that I've said in my life on Twitter, like, I don't want to be on the board either. It's a great idea, though. So
nobody
that
will use this service.
I can throw tweets in other people's spaces.
So J-Boost has a follow-up question, which is also, he says, now that you've hit 99 episodes, how does it feel? And don't just say it feels great. And I'll be honest with you, Jay, I'm tired. It's I am tired. It's hard. 99 episodes is a lot of time. I feel you know, it does. It gets grinding. It's tired. I know what you guys went through, man. I know why you took a break. You know, like I definitely would love to take one too.
You guys.
Yeah. Then we'd be like you guys. I mean, it is. It's hard. The grind is hard. It's nice to be at 99. You know, I feel like 99 isn't 100, right? Not to even troll you, but it's true, right? So I feel once we get episode 100, that's a milestone. I know Spruik, he's way ahead of us, but, you know, I feel like that would be something big for us. But, yeah, it's 99 is – it's fun. I mean, we got Spruik on. I've been wanting to have him on for a long time, but – Yeah, shit, it's almost surreal, too. Like, when we look back, I know we say this all the time, but we look back at, like, how the hell did we even do 99 episodes? Like, honestly, how did people listen?
We're about tied. I'm coming up on my two-year anniversary, and that's 2 years at 52 weeks a year, and I don't miss weeks. So I'm probably just at about 100 episodes now. Bump in the Nights numbered are up through 62 numbered episodes, but there's easily as many side episodes between anthologies, theme weeks, swing weeks, and live rips.
Right.
And I'll tell you, I don't feel that different. I feel, if anything, the momentum carrying me on is stronger than ever. Like, I just won't stop now. It's not something I'm willing to do.
Nice.
Hell yeah. That's the way I feel about it, too. I could definitely see both sides of it because, I can definitely agree with Maddie's sentiment. With having other things going on in life, you know, full-time job, a family, I've got my band, I've got my motorcycle club, and I've got actually trying to get in some playing magic among all those other things, and then having this show every week and wanting to do well for you guys. Cause, you know, as a fans, I don't ever want this to be a thing where it's like, oh, we've got to show up again and talk for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like then it's not heavy meta anymore. And so, like, it's finding that love of this game, that love of this community, and that energy every week to, like, all right, let's do this. And so, yeah, it gets taxing at times. There are those weeks where I'm like, I don't want to fucking talk about Magic. I don't want to fucking talk about anything right now. But I'm like, all right, hey, here we go. And then that carries over into the next week where I'm just like, okay, now I'm stoked. I've been talking about shit, like Magic stuff on Twitter all fucking day. And I'm excited and I'm fucking, yeah, here we go. We get to fucking record. And so it's one of those things where, yeah, it gets taxing after, you know, doing this many episodes. But at the same time, the fact that we're still able to do this, the fact that we have the gracious fans that we do, that do whatever they can to help us out, whatever they can to just be a part of this. You know, fuck, dude, we got, you know, two spinoff casts basically, like, coming from this. And it was all just from me and Maddie fucking around, having a good time.
You guys have a hashtag, all right? That is like your own Wikipedia page.
Yeah, exactly. We have a hashtag.
We have multiple tags. We have shit heavy meta says. We have heavy meta quotes. We've got some crazy hashtags.
But right? And that's it. That's exactly it. It's our fan base, they're militant motherfuckers, and they're awesome. And like, again, it just, you know, like getting into what Skrook was saying about, you know, his stuff is it like it just pushes you that much further. I can't fucking stop doing this. I love doing it and I love doing it for you guys. And so that's, you know, it's just going to push us that much further post episode 100. We might even do like an episode 101 before we quit.
I was not looking forward to the 100 bumpocalypse. The 50 was something already, but when I get to the 100 bumps.
You gotta step it up.
What's that?
I said you gotta step it up for 100. The 100.
I know. That's why I started introducing the bump lightning round features, because I need more practice trying to
get this
whole
chops up. Yeah, hell yeah.
Every 30 seconds thing.
Oh, wow.
I like about having done 99, you guys did 99 weeks. I've only done around that. I think I'm at like 96 or 97 total. But what I like most about it is it's really having to do it every week, rain or shine, and just, like, especially after I got popular, and I know, like, I get, if I don't have it up Monday morning, people are, like, asking for it. They're tweeting me saying, hey, I'm here at the gym, and I don't have a new bump, like, come through for me, man. And I like that, but it's also the fact that I go out of my way, like, no matter what I'm doing, to make it each week. It's, like, real core to me now. And sometimes I have people ask me about monetizing Bump or something. They talk about, like, what's the next step? Where are you going with this? Like, you do all this cast for, you know, promotion, but, like, how are you going to branch out from here? And it's, like, there is no next step. This is just what I do. I don't need to make a cent. I don't have a thing. This is, this cast is why anyone does anything. It's my child that I love, and I don't need a reason.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, it's what you love. It's what you love to do. And I think there's something to be said so much for that, like,
that mentality.
Doing it religiously, like you said, is another thing that, like, I can, I can parallel this in my life with, it's like I have band practice, you know, it used to be twice a week, now it's once a week. But it's like I have band practice once a week, just like I have heavy metal once a week. The difference there is like we don't drop episodes. We do this every fucking week. And like it takes, you know, Maddie's in the hospital, I sit down with somebody else and we make an episode. Like I think there's one episode where we're like, I think it was around Christmas time, where we're like, okay, well, let's release the very first beta episode that we did that didn't actually get released. Let's release that, you know, as a Easter egg kind of thing, because neither one of us can do this. And it takes, you know, an act of God to keep one of us from at least being on this cast. Whereas and so we do it religiously, whether one of us or both of us is not feeling up to it for the day. It's like, you know what? We're going to put on our face and we're going to do this. And my band, though, on the other hand, somebody's always canceling band practice for something, you know? And so I feel like it's not that big of a deal. It's like, oh, man, I had a shit day at work. Guys, I'm not going to make it tonight. It's no big deal. I just am going to continue to live my life, and it's not a problem. Like, it never even enters my mind. If I had a shit day at work, but it's Wednesday, I know that I'm casting tonight. And that's it. And I think that keeping that mentality, you don't let yourself have a crutch. If, say, maybe, you know, we were like, oh, well, you know, we'll be a little more lax on this. And if we can't make it, we can't make it. No, not that big of a deal. Then it starts becoming a crutch where it's like, well, I mean, shit, Maddie didn't make it last weekend. And I had a bad fucking week this week. So I'm not going to make it this week. And like, it becomes a thing. But if you have it in your mind that you're going to religiously do it every week, it just keeps it going.
Yep.
It drags you through those harder times.
I mean, yeah. Not just that, but like, if you guys listen to the cast, you know what I sound like when I'm doing it. Like, no knock on the other things that I do in my life. I mean, no knock on them at all, but like, I don't know if it comes through, but when the hour I spend making Bump is usually the best hour of my week. It's the most fun thing I do.
Yeah. You can totally hear it in your voice. Like you can tell you are amped. And you know what though? You get me amped. Like that's what I love. Like I guess that's why people listen to this show. Like when we're excited to talk about cards, even if they're dumb cards, we're passionate. We love this game. And then the people are like, oh man, I like this game too. And same thing with your music.
Like schoolgirls about deflecting palm for 20 minutes.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, well, you could totally frame it that way if you want. I don't know. You know. I was going to say, though, Sprick, you mentioned something really interesting. I know a lot of people say, oh, I'm corporate and I try to, you know, protect the brand and all this stuff. But, you know, we really do this for us. Like, that's why we do it. Uh-huh. Like, if it's not for us, then it's not for you. So, We're not trying to monetize anything we do. We do everything for the fans, but then the show is for us. But then when it's out in the world, then it's yours. So I don't want that to ever be taken away. And so that's why, like, we have no – people ask us, what's next? What are you going to do? I'm like, well, monetarily, I don't know. Like, we don't know. Like, that's not even on our radar. You know,
we're just doing this because it's fucking fun.
The next episode is on our radar. That's like as far as we plan shit right now. And sometimes not even that far.
I was going to say, you plan that far ahead?
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, let's jump into another question. So Real Evil Genius asks this question. Do you think the clan names Mardu, Sultai, etc. are holding up? He says, I think they're actually seeing widespread usage. Oh, I hate to say this, man. I see this is that website because we royally thrashed the new names when they first came out.
Oh, you guys should have put it on the board.
I know, right? It should be on the board. Then you could throw darts at the board. Yeah. Oh, but yeah, I agree.
Well, we do in essence have a board, and it's called this podcast because we do get called the fuck out when we say something a couple episodes back and then change our minds. Oh, we definitely catch hell.
You're not allowed to do that.
I mean, were you guys active during Alara or First Ravnica?
Oh, yeah.
I came back to the game at M15. M15.
Yeah, you're brand new.
At fucking M12.
I didn't even listen to anybody. Sorry, I shouldn't brag about not listening. But I gave no regard at all to anyone who was talking about how these clan names wouldn't catch on because it was identical to what people said before Alara, identical to what people said before Ravnica, especially Ravnica, because it was the first time Boros. Something like this had ever happened.
Yeah, they're like Boros. Oh, yeah, I remember like, all. They're like, that's calling just stupid.
It Bug. What's Simic? Like, I don't know how to pronounce these words. Like, yeah. I just liked calling them Ua and Ub. B-U. And it's same thing with the shards, especially. People were really getting on the case of Jund and Bant. For like, people generally thought like Grixis and Esper were kind of cool, but they were like Jund, Bant. It just sounds like such guttural single syllable words. Mm-hmm. And so this time around, people are like, oh, you know, I don't like Abzan. Hard to say, but like, history will repeat itself when they
exactly. Come up that ties into what I was saying a few minutes ago. Like, I'll be the first to admit that, like, I hated them at first, and I don't know if I still like them or not, but they are definitely growing on me a lot more, and, you know, and I'm sure the next time something like this happens, I will fucking be like, this is the worst, but, you know, it's like, if you can't admit it, you know, then fuck off, and that's
Spurge,
exactly
you gotta make this board. Make this board happen. This is a great idea.
I realize, like, I didn't like them at all. I still am kind of yeah on them. I mean, I'm not sure. There's some of them that I'm using, there's some of them that I'm not, but I definitely see it happening. I don't know if, like, especially if these ones, if it's like, you know, coverage pushing it, if it's is it Star City that went back through and just changed all the deck names to include these new names, like instead of Rug and Bug and shit like that. And so I think they're really pushing it enough, and you start hearing it enough that you kind of get used to it.
The only one that I would grade poorly...
It's Mardu.
No, I actually like Mardu. I think that the ones that I like the most were the color combinations most in need of one. Especially, like, you know, Mardu. Rug and Bug had acronyms, and people like Junk. But we really had nothing good to call Mardu and Jeskai. So those...
Yeah, it was like America colors, or just... Red, white, blue.
Or yeah. I personally really like Jeskai. I think that name is growing on me the most. Mardu just doesn't sound cool enough for me for the colors that it represents.
The only one I dislike, and this is purely from a euphonic standpoint, mm-hmm. is I don't like Abzan because the...
Because it should have been Azkaban.
It tricks your tongue into wanting to say Azban. And yep. Most people, when they aren't paying attention, I hear continuously saying Azban. Right, and then are disappointed when they try to pronounce Abzan and it doesn't feel right. So just that one, I just kind of wish they'd made it Azban.
I can definitely agree with that. Another thing I'm kind of curious about, too, is, like, at least what I've noticed... like, from the guild names, even, from, like, Return to Ravnica, you know, you didn't hear those much. I mean, obviously, they were there from the original Ravnica, but you know, up until Return to Ravnica, you didn't hear shit like Orzhov and stuff. I'd heard Boros a million times. Boros just happened to be one of those ones that
caught. That's the one that really stuck, yeah.
It's the one that really stuck. But you would hear, you know, people would be like, oh, yeah, black, white, this, you know, fucking...
Yeah, you'd never hear Gruul.
You know, yeah, exactly. You wouldn't hear it. It'd be red, green, not Gruul. Everybody were using those terms throughout while those cards, you know, while that was the set that we were in. And I've even heard it already, you know, drop off. People don't call it fucking, you know, Golgari fucking rock. It's just fucking green, black rock deck or fucking, and it's already fallen off. People still use Boros. Because it's just stuck forever. So I'm actually kind of curious to see, like, once this block is done, how many of these actually fucking stick.
I've got a theory on that, and it's that, and this is only a theory, so feel free to refute it, but it's that the names persist to the extent that the deck lives up to what its faction meant to do. So I feel like, for instance, there was a really popular deck called Boros something, in, like, Shadowmoor Zendikar era standard, and it was so much like a Boros deck with Geopede and Step Links, but it was, like, one drops, attack, attack. And it felt like, had it been Ravnica block, those cards would have all had a Boros watermark, right?
And so I never really thought of it that way. That's a valid point, is, like, where it actually stands up to what the guild does.
Right, and I've heard with black-green decks, when it seems like, the modern decks, modern black-green board control, which is just kind of an archetype that's just sort of like, I'm playing Tarmogoyf with Liliana's. Right. Nobody really calls that Golgari. But I feel like if you also take a black green deck and it's full of Satyr Wayfinders and it's reanimating creatures out of the yard and it's grinding or dredging, suddenly people want to call it Golgari.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. 100%
agree, yeah. I just think, like, at least with Jeskai, if you're playing creatures, it feels like it's Jeskai. Like, I could see if there is a modern deck, like even Scotty Mac's Geist deck, that feels, yeah, like, that still feels to me like that's Jeskai, right?
Right, and yeah, I would say that all Abzan decks feel pretty Abzan-y. Sure. Like, this standard Abzan deck is exactly what, like, all the junk decks in Modern are like. They're just value and fat.
Yep.
I'm interested to see, and I now that you brought that up, I'm interested to see how well, like, that theory holds up, too, because it makes a lot of sense, and that if, you know, maybe some of these color combinations really catch on, if it's because of the, you know, the whole feel of that wedge, or if it's because maybe it also is because they just roll off the tongue better, like you said, you know, the Azban Abzan thing. Well, maybe people be like,
oh, go ahead. Right,
sweet, we're clear of that. Now we can start calling it this. Was that?
Well, I was going to say that one reason I feel like, for instance, Orzhov is one that nobody ever went out of their way to call white-black decks, is right. That other than when Ravnica sets have been in standard, white-black has continually only come together around tokens. Every time it's been Bitter Blossom, Spectral Procession, Lingering Souls. None of that is very Orzhov-y, right? And I feel like people might call it Orzhov if it came together because it was a deck based around
life gain and life drain loss.
And taxation of resources long-term. But it never is when there aren't explicit Orzhov cards. So people always say white-black tokens, right? Funnily enough, it's never the white-green decks, which you'd think would be, because then people would be like, oh, that's Selesnya aggro.
Yeah, I don't. Selesnya is another one. I never hear that one, man. But enough of that. So we're going to move on. Sam at the Craven one, he asks us, have not been listening that long, but how did the obsession with Kraken start?
That's it. That's how it
No, you know what? I think it goes back. If you go listen all the way back to, like, episode 3, I had told the story of the drunken people with the vodka and cinnamon hearts. And that had led to Kevy, I believe you started telling me about different types of rum. And I think a couple episodes later you were like drinking, I'm like, what are you drinking tonight? You were like cracking rum. And I'm pretty sure then I was like, all right, I'm going to get a bottle.
Yeah,
I'm not sure,
you did, and then you sat there. I remember, like, at one point, you sat there, you're like, okay, I got this Kraken rum that you're talking about, which isn't, I mean, shit, it could have been hardened scales we were talking about, but it happened to be this rum that I was talking about, you know, a little more than I probably should have, and then you're like, well, I'm going to try this shit out, and you got, like, your first bottle of it and sat down on the cast, and we're checking it out, and you're like, oh, holy balls, this stuff is good.
You know, it's weird, Kraken rum, it's not the first rum I've ever tried. I really don't even like rum, but I do like that. So it's one of those scenarios where I think it's just a superior product, and when you try it, you just, I don't know, it's good, right? Like, it's one of those things. It's not like drinking rum, you're drinking Kraken. And that's rare. I guess an alcohol, at least I find.
Yeah, I think Kraken's thing too is like, I mean, it's not just rum. I mean, there are a lot of rums out there, Captain Morgan, Sailor Jerry, stuff like that, that are pretty much the same thing as far as I'm concerned. But Kraken definitely is different. It's got a different taste to it. It's rum. It's not some fruity rum or something, you know, like some fruity vodka or Fireball or some shit. It's straight up rum, but it's just really got a different taste to it. And I think on top of it, like, I mean, my appeal to it is, like, you know, the taste, I love it. And then there's the, like, their marketing. Yeah, their marketing.
Fucking Kraken, dude.
Their bottles are sweet. Their fucking artwork is sweet. Their, like, social media marketing campaign is sweet. So it just kind of lends itself to being like, oh, hell yeah, I love this stuff. And it just happened to catch fire with us. So it's become kind of the official drink of this cast, I guess. Let us use their shit.
I mean, before that, it was Tijuana Rape Machine was the official drink. So, you know, like, I'm just saying. That was bad. If anyone was talking about corporate image, that drink should not have been associated with that medicine. Okay, so Nickel Nuts asks us, he goes, you guys ever think of yourselves as leaders of a group of jihadists? Do you guys ever think you'd have this much pull in the community? I don't. This is my
not opinion. A chance.
This is my opinion. I could be wrong, but I don't feel like we're leaders of anything. That's just me. I mean, I know a lot of people kind of like. I don't even know. Like, I'm not on the outside. We're just like. Here's the thing, guys. Day in and day out, we sit here and we just talk into microphones. And occasionally, like, I'll see a Skype thing of Kevy and maybe Ragey Gumby shaking their junk at the screen if it's one of those
here
nights.
And there,
but
you know.
Yeah, here and there. But it's, for us, it's in a bubble. We don't know. So it doesn't feel like anyone's listening, you know? And then it's only through social media or when you meet people and you see reactions. Like, you know, sometimes in the beginning – when, you know, we'd call for questions and, like, two people would give us questions, you know, we'd feel like, why are we doing this? Oh, well, it's for us. So, like, as far as feeling like a leaders, I don't feel like we're leaders.
I don't feel like we are either. I think, and I've said this before, like, I think that what we do is something that, I mean, I guess it was something that was lacking in a sea of, like we were talking about at the beginning of the episode with, like, Spruik's thing. You know, you've got this sea of podcasts that are all strictly talking about magic strategy and so on and so forth. And there's something different that, like, the magic players can grasp onto because, you know, Spruik himself is a very avid magic player. He's into this game. You know, then there's also with, like, the gathering thing that he did with Chapin. You know, he's very, you know, his roots are in this community, yet he was doing something that wasn't telling you what standard deck to play with this weekend at FNM. And I think that was something that, you know, when we started was, like, sorely lacking. Like, the A-team delved into the, you know, the crass kind of, you know, fucking around, having a good time thing. But they still were, you know, keeping 70 to 80% on track with, like, Magic and what was going on with Magic. And it was the fact that we just did this thing where we were fucking around, having fun, and you weren't really getting any real Magic information out of this cast. It was just like us having a good time, and it was that breath of fresh air that I think a lot of people that listen to a lot of podcasts like, and then it just kind of took off from there. But I still don't think that, like, it's the community that we accidentally spawned, the SVU that we accidentally spawned, that really took this and turned it into what it is. You know, it's, I'm proud to be, like, you know, the one of the two guys that's, you know, at the forefront of it, or the figurehead, so to speak. But I mean, you know damn good and well, Maddie, we're not the ones that drive this thing.
I think
the community, and that's exactly it. It's these people that have, you know, I guess I've said it before, but it's like we're a banner for these people, these like-minded people to rally around.
I think what it is, Kevy, is we have the two loudest voices.
Exactly. So, we're just loud and do it.
Yeah, it's true, right? Like, we reach further, so people pay attention. But it's not like we're not leaders, so. At least I don't feel like it is. But, hey.
Maybe counter-examples?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
counter-examples of what... Yeah, you know what? Everyone needs a bad example of what not to do. I don't know. I just hope the jihadist nature of our rabid fan base, we don't kill nobody, guys. Just keep it down.
Don't kill anybody.
No more street fights and stuff, man. We don't need that shit going down.
I do have to say, I think it's been long enough now. That whole fucking ordeal was hilarious. When, like, the
that was pretty funny.
A-team fan versus heavy meta fan fucking fight broke out on Twitter for like 24 hours where they all wanted to fight each other, and it was fucking hilarious because, like, these guys are my fucking friends. And as much as we had to kind of calm, you know, put out the flames when that happened, I do have to say it was pretty fucking funny watching that happen, going, Jesus Christ, you guys, calm the fuck down.
Yeah, now let's talk about real quickly. Nathan Weber has a good question. He goes, what's going down with those awesome FNM formats now, which is basically anything we want?
Oh, yes. He mentioned something about, like, just Cube.
Yes.
Every Friday or a day.
I mean, hey, like, I don't go to FNM because sometimes I just don't have the time, but geez, man, if stores are allowed to just, like, make a cube and say that's the FNM format, wow, that is insane. So face, get that damn cube built or I'll bring mine. Fuck it. I'll be the official cube. That's just awesome, man. FNM cube night? What? I don't know. I think that's awesome.
I mean, I can see issues with logistics. I mean, the stores are going to have to
come on.
Well, no, I'm saying, like, the stores are going to have to figure that shit out to be able to run a tournament out of a cube and stuff. Like, I can see logistic issues with, you know, basically letting you, like, opening up sanctioned F&M formats to whatever you want it to be. I mean, I can see there being logistical issues, and I'm actually surprised Wizards went with that.
Oh,
it's like,
I am.
Okay,
I am,
you know, so it's like, you know, like, surprised. Okay, cool, you can do fucking, you can do vintage tournaments now, like, for F&M, but, like, then is it, like, you know, you can't use proxies, I'm assuming, since it's a sanctioned event, so everybody's got to have their full deck, and, you know.
So
and
the one entitled, like, privileged dude in your community gets to show up with his, vintage deck and declare himself the winner.
Well, and that's exactly what I'm saying. That's where the logistic problems
well,
come
that
in. Like, is it's like, you know, like, how hard would it be? And I hate that there are the dishonest people out there that would do this, but I mean, how hard would it be to be like, you know, sweet, well, I'm gonna, you know, at your the guy that runs your local store is just all, yeah, man, I found a way that I could just start giving you free boxes of product, and that's called. You're the only one with a fucking vintage deck in town, so I'm gonna start running vintage every fucking, you know, every Friday night, and you show up, and if nobody else does, then cool, you win. Or, well, I guess you still have to you have to have, like, eight people to sanction it, right?
What I'd be more worried about is, I think it's awesome that everywhere and their moms is gonna wanna be on Cube, like, beginning tomorrow, but I would just be terrified of people walking away with the money because, you know, a cube is a good chance to sit there and have 800 of the store's dollars in your pocket. And,
yeah. I see that definitely being an issue.
That's rough. I just don't know. I want to know the best in people. Like, and I believe as a rule you have to know the best in people. But as a business, you could go broke.
Yeah, you can't make that risk
with a good cube deck. You could literally, like, lose your health over it.
Sure. Yeah. Like, but obviously cube and they in I mean obviously this opens up a huge ball of, like, rats. A ball of rats? Is that such a thing?
A ball of rats.
That's a heavy bit of quote, ball of rats. Like, with proxies, because yeah, if I'm an owner of a store, there's no way I'm putting a $20,000 cube on a table for a bunch of randos that are going to draft it. I'm going to put a proxy cube. Well,
right,
what is that?
As soon as they say, okay, it's okay if you're a store owner to use proxies in your cube.
But so you can't because you sell – you're encouraging people. Like, I get it. As a store owner,
right,
you can't. That's
what I'm saying is, like, right. And Wizards can't let you do that because that opens a fucked up door that they don't want to go to. So then you're left with, like – all right, let's do Popper Cube, which, I mean, might still draw some people. You know, we'll do a Popper Cube so that we can still do a cube format for F&M, but, you know, we can't, like, people aren't going to be walking off with ridiculous amounts of money. So then you're like, all right, cool, it's a Popper Cube. I know me personally, if they had, like, TSG's cube at F&M, I'd find a way to be there. If they have a Popper Cube at F&M, I'm going to continue living my life and have my friends go play Magic. So it's one of those things where it's like, you know, cube for F&M would be fucking sweet. But then you have to have, like, the guy at the bottom of the pyramid scheme that's willing to buy a cube and fucking let people play with it. Like, I mean, maybe there are ways around it. Maybe there's something that we haven't figured out yet. Maybe there's a fucking voucher system, or, like, maybe there's a fucking you sign
okay,
up.
Okay, I got it. We just have – we handcuff people to the table. And you just have to count your packs out, 15 cards, you know, or maybe you give your driver's license.
Well, maybe your driver's license definitely is a good idea. And maybe it's like, you know, when you register your deck for a GP, you know, you're registering your deck, in your cube draft, you register your deck
and your credit card number.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Exactly, and it says
credit card or driver's license.
You are responsible for the cards that you've listed here in this, you know, in this deck. You are responsible for those cards, and, you know, if that Lotus that's in there just walks off, like, you're responsible for it, and so is the credit card that you put on file. Maybe there is a way around it. Maybe there is a fluid way that you could do it. I'm sure there's a way that somebody could pull off a fucking cube draft at F&M, but not a fluid way to do it where it could happen all the time. Well, and so I think
even
that
even so, though, fine, like the other fine thing too is LGSs live on singles, right? So mm-hmm. it's as much fun as it would be to get the crowd. You're not selling singles at that time, and it's standard. You know, Wizards knows what's good for. Oh God, what's a less gendered version of what's good for the goose is what's good for the gander? I don't. Okay, what's good for the stores is to keep these people coming in. I don't know why that would make Wizards the gander. The point is you get people in every week, and they need more coursers of Crewfix to play this sure. week, and that's what's been opened in the last year. Like, Standard exists for a reason. Modern, too. That's going to help get the that's going to help get the Eternal cards out of the cases. If people want to run block, that's great. But I think they'll be pretty sad when people's block decks cost like $50 and they can't move singles.
Yeah, I don't see block. Like, I look, regardless, like, even at face-to-face games, they were doing already most of this stuff. Like, that's what I found so fun, that we would do, we did this crazy, what was it called? Core set, sealed, where it's one of every core set, right? So. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's something fun. I can see definitely being
in. Yeah, it moves boosters, right? It's, like, I mean, fun
could,
shit like that.
You can sanction fucking chaos drafts now.
Like, exactly, which is my favorite draft.
You know, that could be a lot of fun. You know, or, you know, maybe you buy, maybe the store buys a box of fucking Modern Masters and does a Modern Masters draft that's sanctioned. So now, like, they're buying a box of Modern Masters and selling those packs off, you know, of course, at a premium. But, like, you know, people come in and be like, oh, sweet, I get to actually, you know, Modern Masters draft format, which was a ton of fucking fun anyway, something that people are, like, going to love to do. It's a sanctioned event, and they're going to get their Modern Masters packs that are worth a fucking buttload anyway because there's great expensive cards in them. You know, it's like, you can do things like that. I think that, like, this opens up a lot of worlds. I just don't think that, like, it opens up a cube world at all.
I want to go to one of those chaos drafts and bring a From the Vault as one of my boosters, because they got 15 cards in them, and just be like, this is my From the Vault Legends, and this is the
that would be, but those are the best. I would love to play in that Chaos Draft with you. That sounds fun as hell, man.
First
Let's
pick,
do that.
If I'm starting the draft with From the Vault Legends, what are you picking? Mm-hmm. Zhao Dun?
Maybe.
Fuck, I don't know. I don't know what's in that set.
Dude, I know
I'm a bad Magic player,
like
Bill.
I don't like the horsemanship cards, though. Yeah. Just, I hate them, but they're very powerful, so. I don't know. Maybe. What would you pick?
Oh, I'd probably start with Zhao Dun.
Isn't Zhao Dun the one that gives your creatures horsemanship?
Yeah. No. That's Zhao Dun the One-Eyed is the black one, the 3/2 that regrows a sorcery. So it's really busted with any tutor, any corrupt,
Knight's
Whisper effects. It's really good like that. And I know the worst one is like the cow Lord of Way. Well, no, I mean nobody's gonna take Progenitus. That's not happening. So Progenitus is probably the last one to go.
Yeah, but that'd be fucking sweet to bring that into your chaos draft.
Oh,
yeah,
any of those?
Because you know what you're gonna get.
Uh-huh. Any of those premium ones are fun as shit, man.
Oh, I mean, Teferi.
Yeah, Teferi.
A strong pick. Kiki.
Yeah.
Is really strong. Omnath is in there.
Even
Una
maybe?
Yeah, you know what? Una. Actually, yeah. South Dune isn't even the best black card. Visara's in there.
Oh,
ooh,
Visara's
a sweet card.
That card's insane.
Yeah, okay, I think I'm picking Una, Queen of the Fae first, and hoping to wheel Visara. Or Zhao Dun or Cow Cow.
I mean, also, like, if we're playing Chaos Draft, depending on what packs we're drafting, maybe even Captain Sissy, search your library for a legendary card. A lot of interesting legends to draft. I don't know. No?
Maybe not.
I always like Rafik too, man. I always like Rafik, but I like Exalted. Alright, so next question. Matthew Myers. Kofonic. Ah, I think I got it right. He says, if you are about to lose the Pro Tour and all you can do is slow roll your opponent, what is the most tilting-inducing mannerism? Okay, so if in this false scenario that exists in some alternate dimension. I am about to lose the Pro Tour. And all I can do is slow roll my opponent. I am absolutely like, geez. If he gives me his deck, I'm just going to riffle shuffle that shit and, oh man. I'm sorry, Ari Lax. The way he shuffled the opponent's deck was rude. That is like, dude, I would be pissed if I saw you do that to my cards. Fuck, do it to yours, but please, do fucking shuffle my cards gently, for Christ's sakes, man.
I think that's how, like, the only way I'd end up getting DQ'd is, like, jumping over the table for you fucking up my cards.
Is that a tilt-inducing mannerism, Kevin?
I think so. I think, like... I don't care how you act. I'm not going to, like, table flip because you draw the right card in the right situation. But I could see me, like, just losing my shit if I'm like, man, I've spent a lot of time and effort putting this deck together. And then you're just all...
And yeah. Fucking,
why do you have a Texan accent when you're losing at the Pro Tour?
I'm not sure, but...
Didn't you know that's like, what happened?
Man, I spent a long time.
I'll tell you what, I'm not sure why.
Listen, you don't understand. He's American. Like you're up in Buffalo. You're too close to the border
you're
here.
Almost
you know,
Canada.
Yeah, you're almost Canadian, man.
Like, I'm Canadian. Yeah.
There's Tim Hortons in Buffalo, for Christ's sakes. Like, come on. No, in all honesty, I think the most tilt-inducing thing you can do is just to keep asking the guy retarded questions. Like, how many cards are in your hand? He's like, I have two. Okay, how many cards are in your library? Why? Well, I'm asking, so if it's a Pro Tour, I need to know this information. And you just keep stopping his plays. So, like, can I see your graveyard? And just count them really slow. And they're like, how many cards do you have again? Two. Okay, let me write that down. I think that would tilt me.
I think, speaking from personal experience, the most tilting thing, because I don't, like, play a lot of, like, competitive, or I don't really play any competitive Magic other than online. So, like, the extent of my experience is, like, fucking pre-releases, because I used to go to all the pre-releases, and nothing pisses me off more than sitting at a pre-release in a small town with, you know, very few Magic players, and having, like, the guy that's just, like, all, well... You know, I'm just here because I was supposed to go to a different fucking a different pre-release out of town somewhere, and he's just like, you know, brushing his hair out of his face as he's telling you, like, he's all, you know, like, well, so I was playing against Brad Nelson at this last GP, and I was like, yeah, round one, huh? It, like, it's one of those things, like, it just bothers me when it's like, dude, we're all here to just hang out. There's a 12-year-old sitting next to us that is just figuring out what this game is all about, but the guy's just, like, name-dropping and just being like, oh, I'm just too good to be here. I just had to be here because my plans fell through to go somewhere else. Like, that is very tilt-inducing. I'm just like, all right, I'm putting my headphones in. We're going to finish this game off.
I was going to play the Vintage Championships, but, you know, I decided to enter the Pro Tour, so I'm here.
Yeah, and since it's my weekend off from the Pro Tour, I'm just coming here to the middle of the desert to play a pre-release. And
It's my weekend off. I got a break between now and States, you know.
No,
so
no. I mean, like, I only have one weekend off because I'm a Pro Tourer, and... I basically, you know, between testing and brewing up decks and making up Magic cards for Wizards, I'm, you know, I'm just here at this. I'm like, what? You high right now?
I actually took a lot of peyote before I came. I'm actually, this is my only weekend off, so I'm using it to find my spirit card. So whichever one in my sealed pool speaks to me. Maybe that's who I'm meant
Trail
to be.
Trail of Mystery.
No, but what's best is watching them just get so tilted. When they lose that random match to the 14-year-old kid that was, you know, sitting next to
them.
And watching them just go on full fucking tilt and, like, and blame the pool and fucking... It's just like, oh, man. That's the redeeming part. That's the anti-tilt, is watching that dude lose to a kid.
Actually, the most tilt-inducing thing I've seen is, like... When you're drawing nothing but lands, right? Or in the reverse, right? When you can't draw your mana base, and you know, like, it doesn't matter what your opponent could throw a sheep at you and you would die, right? But your opponent is going to win, and then they're going to, like, on their alpha strike, they're going to, like, put all their attackers out, and then they're going to put them back. And then they're going to put them all out, and then they're going to think. And you're like, will you just kill me, fucko?
Yeah, I wish you knew I had nothing so that we can be done with this.
But then the most tilting thing, especially in game one, is when they show you their hand and, like, yeah. I also had, like, Hero's Downfall, Stormbreath Dragon, and Butcher the Horde, so, like, even if you kill...
I might have a song about that. Still Had All These. All three of the parts of Still Had All These were based on true stories that have happened to me.
Really?
Well, yeah. that is tilting, so...
Including the dude who beat me in M10 Sealed... with Ant Queen, that he just put two forests in his deck with no fixing.
The guy that splashed for some retarded card.
Like the literal version of splashing for a card. Like, no fixing, just like, here, I'm going to throw these two forests in.
So, I think there's only one thing I do that's bad-mannered. I'm generally a very good loser. But if I'm going to particularly trolly move, and like so what's the number one thing I could do to screw with an opponent is towards the time when I start losing, I'll stop talking in English and like a human and start talking only in the 6 prefabricated Hearthstone phrases that your people can say during Hearthstone. So, like, I've done this before. Like, a turn before, I'm going to lose.
Shut up.
Notes person is, like, going to swing for the win. I'm like, I will crush you. And they're like, all right, whatever, I'm attacking. Well played. And then, like, I scoop up my cards and I'm all, you win this time. And then I make a little head explodey motion.
I don't know if it's tilting or is it just like I want to call, like, man, what's wrong with that guy?
Well fought. I concede.
That's actually a great line. Well fought, sir. I concede. Good game, good sir.
Oh my god. I would not be able to help but just laugh and pee my pants while that was happening.
My favorite thing to do while I play Hearthstone is if you imagine that every time the paladin uses the word justice, that he's actually saying social justice, it's way funnier if he's like, for social justice.
I thought you were going to say every time he says justice, you take a shot. To be like, wow, oh, Hearthstone is fun, man.
Social justice demands real retribution.
Oh my goodness. All right, so I think we've only got a few more questions left. Soup Dog, Brian, he says, with the big reveal tomorrow, apparently there's a big reveal. He says, any prediction or thoughts about the MTG board game? Which, I don't know, Kevin, if you even know, but they were...
Okay, I was going to say, this question, when I read it, really fucked me up because I was like, okay, there's a big reveal tomorrow? I didn't know there was one. Okay, so then I kept reading and I'm like, what? MTG board game? What fucking year are we in? What is happening right now?
That is kind of what I... Okay, so on the Pro Tour, someone had tweeted me the image. They had it up on the screen for a few minutes. It's just like an empty box with like 5 slots missing, so I assume you put like little hero clicks, maybe planeswalkers, it looks like fits in it, but the disappointing thing is it says it's a board game, but it's kind of like interactive with your iPad.
What, dude, is this fucking Magic the Gathering Tactics again?
I don't know, but it just...
Are they really trying to reboot this? They're like, okay, it didn't work as a computer game, so let's make it half board game, half iPad app, and see if that works.
Yeah. I played that Tactics for like 20 minutes, and then I was like, stone cold bullshit.
Yeah,
dude, I tried so bad. I was really jazzed on it because when I first got on Magic Online, and I was just like craving anything Magic. Like I was consuming podcasts left and right, and I was like, you know, it was at a point in time where, you know, I was still playing like Duels of the Planeswalkers, and I was just into it. And I was like, fuck yeah, Magic the Gathering Tactics. This is a whole nother Magic game. Fuck yeah. And I could not, as much as I wanted to love it, like I tried to love it, and it just was terrible.
Yeah,
it just didn't work.
Magic the Gathering Battlegrounds, the old PlayStation game.
Oh, that one.
Cast little sucktail hawks that flew over and hit your opponent in the face.
Horrendous.
Oh, God, yes.
My whole prediction was, and I said, this is an opportunity, right? Like, you want to sell a billion of these board games? Number one, put some really nice dice in it, especially the new dice they're using in coverage with the numbers instead of the dots. I really like those dice. Two, have gold-bordered cards, like Power 9 cards. Something really cool that you can reprint, that you could play Magic. And when I first started playing Magic, me and my friends, we actually taped up like these huge cardboard sheets like on this pool table in my basement. And we drew out little squares, 1-inch squares, over this whole board. Then we drew mountains and rivers and swamps, and we'd play. Like, cast a Stormbird or a Sheevan Dragon, put him on the field, roll a dice, he has to move 6 squares. Like, if they did something interesting like that, where you used Magic cards or these gold border cards, I think that would have been amazing. If it's some stupid iPad interaction game where I take my Jace figure and I put him on my iPad and then Jace like runs through a swamp. I don't know. I'm not too excited. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with this. There's a lot of ways you could do this. I just hope that there's supplemental materials in there that like we can use in the card game. I think
at least dice.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hoping for cards. That would be nice, right? Like, wouldn't that be amazing for cubes? Jesus, you could print anything. You wouldn't have to worry about, oh, does it go in this format? Because it's not legal. So,
right.
That's my spec.
I tell you what, I'm going to refrain from speculating at all, because by the time this Heavy Meta episode comes out, people will already know what the board game is. So I'm going to seem really wrong in retrospect, and I'm not willing to go hashtag on the board.
You're already better at Heavy Meta than me and Matty are, and
Time this goes up, people are going to be like, iPad game, rolling dice for your Shivan Dragon to move. Wow, you guys had no idea.
but if it is, we'll look like heroes. That's the thing. We're wrong on a lot of our speculations, but the ones we're right on, oh, they make us feel good.
Yeah, it's like a drug. It's a lot of chutzpah to go on the board.
For the last 50 episodes of being wrong, we're like, fuck it, but I was right this time.
Yeah, all we ever do is go on the board. That's what we do. Yeah. Ryan Ciano Sanino asks, stepping into the design chair, what card would you make for your deck? I play Green Machine. Kevy plays Lightning Bolt. So if I could make any card that Green Machine needs right now... it needs card draw, but it needs card draw in a way that I can still win quickly enough. So some type of creature, like even something like a Strangleroot Geist that when it just had draw a card on it when it enters the battlefield. Something like that. It doesn't need to be over the top, it just needs to a 2-mana creature that's 2/1 with undying and has draw a card when it enters the battlefield. Oh my god, I would play that.
I just need a fucking white version of Bump in the Night or Lightning Bolt or Lava Spike or whatever. I just need a card in white that deals 3 damage for 1 mana. Like, I don't think I'm asking too much. You know, I'm not going to go over the top and be like, I want a card that does 1 red mana and I win. But, like, you know, realistically, like one more fucking 3 damage to the face, even if it's just to the face, not even a fucking like creature or the face, just a Bump in the Night in white, even without flashback. I don't give a shit. Just give me a white card that does 3 damage to the face for 1 mana, and I would be fucking happy. Because then I don't have to worry about shoving other shit into my deck to make it work. I just keep burning your face.
Yeah, I like that. Or anything removal-wise. I know the green deck, while it, you know, it just stomps over your face, I'd love a fight card that was just a little bit more pushed. Something like if I could fight a player. You know, like I could take Groundbreaker, and then I could, like, basically...
fight a player with it?
Yeah, wouldn't that be amazing? Like, 2-mana, instant, target creature fights player. So it just deals its damage to the player, like flinging it, but it doesn't die? Oh, man. Actually, that is probably incredibly broken.
That's going to be kind of silly.
It's a 7-mana Delve card. Oh, that's not broken, right? Delve isn't broken. Oh, I don't know. What about you, Spruik? Was there any card you'd build?
I can't really play this game, at least to me. Yeah, I want to make, you know, 1 red mana deal 20 damage, right? It's like, why? If I say anything less than that, then I'm not doing a good enough job.
Well, or else we're playing the game of toe
the line of what's acceptable.
Oh, yeah, that's true, I guess.
Can I tweak a card?
Something that'd be fair. You know, tweak a card.
Yeah, I want to go back to the last 2 years of Magic and just have them replayed again without Lifebane Zombie ever having been printed. I just want last year of Standard, and just that card didn't exist. Everything is so different. Green and white have a chance. They can be things again.
Wow, man. Mono Black may not have been the dominant force it was.
God, I got so tired.
Oh, Pack Rat.
Lifebane
so
Zombie. Well, you know, like, Pack Rat was bad, right? But, like, only Lifebane, it just felt so unfair. I'm going to sound whiny. You know, this is my voice actually.
It went up an octave too, man. You went right on the board with that.
But it's just rough because the other colors, Hosers, they all, you know, Witchstalker and Fiendstalker, Paladin or whatever, it just wasn't the same. They didn't just hand you a card advantage as soon as they happened, right? And then Lifebane Zombie was like, I'm just here, and I am throwing a party whether I hit or not, whether your opponent's green or white or not. It's all. I just won.
And the fact that it was 3-1, oh, it was so powerful. Yeah, that card was way overpowered. I agree.
Well, it was overpowered in a shitty way, because it legitimately suppressed, like,
decks.
I think it's awesome when there's an answer to everything in the metagame, when it's always like, hey, if burn gets good enough, there's life gain. If life gain's good enough, there's combo. Etc., no matter what it is, right? But with this, it was like, because the best deck was already playing 4 Lifebane Zombies, just don't come to the table with green or white. I mean, why would you bother? You're pre-sideboarded against.
Yeah, really.
And it's not even answering your cards. It just gets them out of your hand for you.
It's just there. It's just already part of it. Yeah, I get that.
It's a free Thoughtseize, essentially.
So I guess the only card I would create now is a green Zombie Bane Life Root or something.
That hates black.
With Death Touch that exiles a black card from somebody else's hand. And it's just freaking revenge. And we get to have that for 2 years.
Revenge.
Oh, revenge. Like, I'm the guy who's been wrong. Like, I couldn't have been the black mage before the green mage.
Yeah, no shit.
Just go back in time and play the best deck. That's all. Stop trying to play green and white and when that thing was around.
Instead of changing cards, why don't you just play black?
The answer to that is we have to split colors between the two of us. So my fiance got the mono black deck, I got green white aggro. And now this time around she has Jeskai aggro. And I am green, blue, Yissan, the Wanderer Bard, Prophet of Krufix Ramp.
Ooh.
Welcome to married life. When you guys get married and that deck gets good, guess what you get to do? Give her that one.
No, we feel identity with our decks. But yeah, I'm actually super pumped about this Yissan deck. He's a bard, so you get to sing every time you play his ability.
Oh my god. So that's so perfect, dude.
My name is Yissan the Wanderer Bard. I'm going to search for a one drop card. And then every time you do it, you just sing that verse again, but you go a note higher and escalate the number by one.
Yeah, and you bring a fucking megaphone, like 2 F&M with you. So, like, the further it goes, the louder you can get with that sweet megaphone sound that, you know, almost sounds like your vocoder thing on, like, I got some bad news. I got some bad news.
Oh.
Like, you can get that kind of fucking, you can get that kind of gnarly on them at F&M. It'll be sweet.
Drop the bard.
Drop the bard. Oh, my God.
soundboard to take to F&M with you.
It's sweet.
Fucking sweet. That's why, rather than using your Hearthstone fucking, your predisposed Hearthstone references, you just have a fucking Spruik soundboard, and you can just start popping shit up right there.
It's hard to beat the Hearthstone references, though, because, like, it's so insulting. It's like, oh, I just decided we're playing a different game now. Toss bingo.
Oh, man. All right, well, gentlemen, it's almost about that time of the cast. Now, I know...
I feel like I should say this one more time. Like,
well,
it's almost that... Like, you were going to say it's almost that time in the cast where we've got, like, 45 minutes left.
No, I was not.
In the cast. But you know what? I feel like this might be the last time I say this. Go fuck yourself, San Diego!
Like you like to say Hearthstone references, he likes to tell cities to go fuck off.
I mean, I'm a pretty big fan of San Diego. So you take that back.
Dude, it took us like 75 episodes to get Maddie to realize that like I didn't actually dislike San Diego. That it was like,
I know it's anchor.
So when I would close the episode, that it was just an Anchorman reference. But it, Maddie for the longest time, he's just like, nah, dude, we don't want to go to fucking GP San Diego. That would be stupid. That city sucks. Like, no, it's not that I don't like the city. It's, Ron Burgundy. Come on. And he's like, yeah, I get it.
I get it now. You know, the one thing we do on this cast, though, Spruik, which is one of our little trademarks, and it's probably my favorite part of the show, is working on the outro music to make sure that it plays out in a way that relates to or in some verse was mentioned in the cast. So what song would you outro this cast to right now?
Oh, man. All right. If I'm not going to be, like, super self-conscious and pick my own, right? Because obviously
Grant,
all my muddy songs.
Grant, Maddie may do that anyway. Maddie may just put one of your songs up as outro anyway.
No, I think that would be too easy.
That's low-hanging fruit.
We have the master here. You know,
like, do, like, the Hearthstone intro music, so it just starts.
Maddie, troll the shit out of him and put a Barstool Saints song as the outro music.
I like, actually, that's a winner right there.
Put up a folk music song about a wandering bard of some kind.
That's exactly what I was thinking. What
country music guy has at one point been like, I walk around, I'm the bard, I just sing songs.
Well, hey, that actually reminds you. It's one of the best outro music Maddie has ever come up with.
But now hear my song, about the dawn of the night, let's sing the bard song. Tomorrow will take us away, far from home. No one will ever know what is, but the bard songs will remain. Tomorrow will take it away, the fear of today, it will be gone. You two are magic songs.
You don't have that often. And you brought a great personality, so I really appreciate you.
Man, I'm blushing. You guys are too sweet. Well, I had a great time here, too. I would love to be back on sometime. Let's not wait another 99 episodes to bring the Spruik back. We'd love to be back on sometime.
Oh, dude. We'd love to have you on again. Sure.
I didn't even know you liked being on. Most people don't.
Oh, man. I love interviewing on casts, man. I like to be on a cast a week aside from my own.
Nice.
Hell yeah, that's the way to do it.
I'm down anytime. All right,
and that's why this motherfucker's got so many followers.
Thanks for entertaining me, Heavy Meta, and your SVU. I want to say one more time, I'm Spruik. I do Bump of the Night. It's an hour of electro house music, remixed DJ style with seamless mixes by me every week on MTG Cast and iTunes. You can always count on it every Monday morning. Maddie and Kevy listen to it. You should too.
Hell yeah.
You should too.
Damn right.
Class notes, bro. Why is fucking album?
Cause the bot songs were remade.